Hang on, drums.
Hello, and welcome to the Adeptus Terra podcast. I'm Matt.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Neil.
And I hope you enjoyed that intro.
Happy Estonia Day.
Yes, well remembered.
The 24th of February.
Happy Estonia Day. 100 years?
It's 100th anniversary of independence.
Yes.
It's good.
It is indeed. That's for our friend Tanel.
Tanel.
Indeed. Or Flooney.
Flooney.
For those someone on Discord.
Someone asked me the other day who Flooney was, and I was like...
Was this on Discord?
No, it was on... I think it was Mike. Maybe Mike. And he was like, it's Flooney. Do you know Flooney? And I was like, yeah. We know him. It's fine. If it makes you feel better, and this is in the past, you could go for the birthday brunch at Tallinn, if you like. It's a big party there. Birthday brunch.
It is indeed.
So, sorry. Carry on with the podcast.
Anyway, yes. So there may be scattered Estonian facts throughout this episode. We'll see if Sam carries on his promise to Tanel or not. But yeah, we've got lots in store for you guys. Hopefully it's a fun, entertaining episode. We've already had a laugh recording our own intro, which you've heard. Sorry about that. but yeah, we're covering the Necrons for possibly the first time ever, really. We covered their fleet in our not-so-short mini-series.
Mini-series.
we're starting another one next month, Neil.
Yes.
Much shorter, I promise. But yeah,
you said that about the last one.
We are speaking about the Necrons. We're covering some of their dynasties, or should I say all of their dynasties.
So many dynasties.
I think I had a monster when I was writing the notes out and was like, yes, let's do them all. I had energy back then. but yeah, so we've got that coming up. We've got an interesting Terra Talks and interview for you guys coming up at the end of the episode as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be really good. Positive. Hint, nudge.
50% positive.
Hopefully more.
50% is the number of the coverage of forest of Estonia.
Oh, okay.
It's only 45,000 square kilometers, but 50% of that is...
Forest. Oh, okay.
It gives plenty of space, though, for the 1.3 million inhabitants.
There's a running theme. It's going to happen. Oh, no. Shall we go into news from Terra, gentlemen?
Whoa, slow down.
Oh, that's true. There's so many things to get through. Sorry. Right, so we had a real good time in our last hobby hangout. I think all three of us were there at one point, which was really cool, hosted by Sam.
But I had to go to bed.
Yes, indeed, you did. That was amazing.
Oh, I love your mum.
I went to bed too.
I didn't.
You didn't get told to go to bed, though, did you?
No, I wasn't told to go to bed.
So for those who don't know what our hobby hangouts are, they are a three-hour time slot, normally on a Sunday evening UK time, where we all get together. We join up online and we basically just talk about absolute nonsense and paint and get some hobby done. It's mainly the main driving force for the majority of my hobby progress every month. So if you are like me, then come and join us on Google Hangouts. Like Google Hangouts, though, Skype was actually one of the was actually a startup in Estonia.
Okay. These are really off-putting and they're just throwing me out. But so we had a really great hobby hangout. We've done four or five of these now. And it's come around to myself hosting. Yep. So something we're going to try and do is get the date of our next hobby hangout out on the podcast in the intro, as we're doing right now. So the next one will be March the 25th. So you've got quite a few weeks to put that in your diary, make sure you're around, come join us. It'll be 8 to 11 UK time. So that's on a Sunday evening. Work that out. If you really don't know how to work the difference out, contact us. We'll let you know what time it is for you and what day.
Actually, if you go to our Facebook page, join the event.
Yes.
And it will do it for you.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. So we have an event set up on the Facebook page. You can let us know you're coming, comment what you're going to be hobbying on, just whatever you like, really. We had, I think, 8 or 9 of us at one point in the last one, which was really cool. And they've been fun. Each single one that I've got to, they've been fun and good chance for us to chat to you guys and just hobby with you. So, yeah, March 25th.
We've also had some podcast famous people turn up.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, Loopy sometimes appears. Yep. There's been a threat of Carl once, I think. I know Sam tricked me onto coming online because he said Carl had joined and
there
I
was,
came on.
There was
and
a
was
Carl.
Like no
there
one
was
there.
A Carl, but it wasn't the
it
Carl.
It wasn't the Carl. But yeah, there's some other guys who'd like to join us all over the world, and it's a really good time. Just people like-minded, having fun, having a beer, and drinking whatever, I guess, if you're not into beer. And then doing some hobby for once. So cool. I've already told you Spotlight is Necrons this episode, so hopefully you silver-clad players enjoy that. Hopefully everyone enjoys it, but anyway. And what else have we got on our list? Ah, yes. So next month we are doing our book club, and we've decided in between the big novels that we cover, we're going to do a short story followed by a narrative-based mission. I think we shared that at the last book club. Am I right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
I think we did, but I don't think we shared what book because we've only just decided that. So for next month, we will be looking at Heart of Rage. It's an audiobook originally by Mr. James Swallows. It's about blood angels fighting their way on a Tyranid hive ship. So it should be fun, possibly Zone Mortalis related. We'll see. It can be found in the Space Marines Omnibus. That's an anthology of all the short stories that can be found. One of those books that they've taken those stories from is Victories of the Space Marines. It's quite an old book, but you may have that. It's obviously in audiobook format. It's in the Book of Blood, which is a load of Blood Angels short stories. And it is also can be found in the Blood Angels second omnibus book. So there are lots of places to find this story. So we thought it was a good first short story to do. So hopefully you've got access to one of those or feel like purchasing it, or just will listen to our review of it and decide whether to buy it afterwards.
To be honest, though, there is 696 hours until the next episode airs. So I'm pretty sure in the 696 hours you can read a page. Even if you read
it's like a page. It's like 50 pages, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And you're lucky.
Or an audiobook. Or 71 minutes long.
Okay. So 696 hours to read it. Which in contrast, in the winter, there is only 6 hours of daylight in Estonia. In the summer, there's 18. Think of all that reading you can get done.
By the night.
Sorry, thinking of all that light reading.
Light reading. Whoa!
I see what you did there.
Good.
Anyway, moving on to news from Terra.
I have a feeling that people are really going to dislike this 100 facts.
I do. Don't go too early, otherwise people won't listen.
I've got 100 to get. I've got to get 100 in. No. I'm 3 in.
You haven't actually got 100.
At the end. Yes, I have.
Oh, no.
The end of the podcast is just going to be me going, fact number 29.
Sorry, I've got a bit of a cough.
That's dying.
You can cut that out.
It's almost like you ran up a mountain.
What? What?
That's the cough. It's like you're out of breath because you ran up a mountain. Or maybe the highest hill in Estonia, which is 3,172 meters high, and it's called Big Egg Hill.
Big Egg Hill.
Big Egg Hill.
Okay.
Or Suurmäe. Suurmäe. Something like that.
No, I'm not touching that with a barge pole. Right. Nope. So, previous hobby commitments, gentlemen. Mine was to prime a drop pod, a dreadnought drop pod, Conrad Kurz himself. And my, I suppose that was bonus because I didn't own them at the time. So just those guys, as well as start building walls for my Zone Mortalis. And I am 100% completed.
You've built your Zone Mortalis?
I've started building walls Zone Mortalis, yes. That's what it says.
How many walls have you started?
I've done like 3.5 and a door.
Okay.
Which is like half of a, just under half of a quarter of the board.
Door is bonus because he didn't say he was going to do
That's true. Yeah, sorry. Spoilers. but yeah, so I'm quite happy that I got that done. I did aim low. I think I said last episode that I'd aim for something that I felt 100% I could complete. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that I did. So yeah, more on some of the other things I've been doing in the later part of this segment. Anyway, Sam.
Me. So what did I say I was going to do? I'm not going to say I overreached, but my hobby commitment was to build all the Forge World I brought and paint / complete Call, because Call has started painting, but he wasn't actually done. Mm. So I built and painted my Thalax.
Yes.
There's a photo of them on the Instagram if you want to go have a look. And I built, painted, and based Call.
You did indeed. I saw the pictures. It looks good.
I'm a little terrified to do my Thanatar. I tried to, upon the recommendation of Matt, I tried to blue tack the model together. That didn't work very well.
No?
You've got to
glue some of it together, but you use the blue tack to make the pose.
Oh, no, I fully just blue tacked the entire thing.
No! Oh, Sam.
So I got up to about the hip height.
And then it just fell apart.
When I put the giant upper part of the body on, it just collapsed. So that would be why. Okay.
Yeah, so you can build like...
There were bits I thought, I should probably just glue this. This is never going to move. And I thought, no, Matt said blue tack, so I blue tacked.
Only at the hinges and the parts that you want to have at a certain position.
I also did blue tack or pink tack because, you know, pink tack's better than blue tack. I used it to put together the guns on the Thalax, and it worked very well because there's obviously some wiring that comes off the back, and obviously that wiring is in a certain position that requires the gun to be in a certain position for it to work. So I did that, and then at one point I looked at it and thought, you know, I'm not even going to glue it. I'm just going to leave blue tack and be one of them people. But no, they're all glued now. It's all okay. Matt doesn't have to roll his eyes at me.
Yes, good.
I'll get to the Thanatar eventually. I think what I'll do is I'll probably just bring it down here and sit with you and just do it.
We'll sort it out. It'll be a good fun time.
Yeah. I
I don't know what I'm saying today.
No, that's fine. So, speaking of fun times,
don't start faking people out already when you've got so many to get through.
So, the Thalax were interesting to paint. The models themselves came together quite easily, and I posted a picture of them to our group we've got, to our Facebook chat group that we have with our friends. And the main red was done and the silver was done, but they looked really flat. And then I sort of just sat there and looked at them and thought, well, what can I do to add a little bit more? I think Mark calls it from Phosphorus Studios.
All your painting needs.
I'm pretty sure that he just calls it pizzazz. What can you add to pizzazz it in that exact way?
I'm sure he said, what can you do to take it? No, sorry, that was with Cool. What can you do to take it to the next level?
No, pizzazz. So I thought about what I could do to make it pop and have it as pizzazz. So I painted a lot of the wiring, did a bit of battle damage, washed a bit more, did some more detail work. I did some little green writing on the helmets as well.
I saw that. Mm. Yeah, I want to see that in person. Mm.
It's all right. It's okay. It was never going to be... I originally was going to try and do an emoji on each one. Like this is like a, you know, like the
like
old
a digital
school,
screen.
Yeah, like the green one, and just have like the two dots and the frowny face, and and I tried it, and I drew it on. I've got a bit of plastic card, and I sprayed that black, and I tried doing it then. It came out absolutely amazingly, and I was like, "This is so gonna work." So then I did it on the first one, and it just came out horribly. It was never. And so I literally was just like, right, lick the thumb and washed it off again. And then was like, right, I'll try again. And I think it's the way the face shit mask and the glass would convex around and wrap around. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's made for that to look like on there. And it's quite thin. It's quite thin and long, like a Savoy. Not like the
What way are you going with this?
This whole sentence has just been a bit weird.
No. So it's really long and thin, like a saveloy. like so the you know the GW
saveloys.
No, don't be weird. Come on, you know like the GW Castellacs. They do where they've got quite a
Castellan. Yes.
Castellan, yeah. So they've got like the hamburger looking. visor, and I've seen really cool emoji painted on there.
Are you hungry?
It works really well. No, I'm right. It works really well. So I thought it would be really great, but I think it's just too thin. I think it's just
too thin.
So what I did some like squiggly green lines, like very very tasteful squiggly green lines. So I'm hopefully they'll be okay. And I washed the visor in a gloss as well, so it looks a bit glass like.
That would have been good. You could have done a like a heartbeat monitor.
That would have been good. That would have been good. It would have just been screen. It would have just been a line though, because they're robots and are dead.
But that's kind of the irony of it.
I'm happy with how they come together. They've come together. It's the extra little bits that I added after I thought I'm nearly done now, which actually made them work a bit more. So having a few of the wirings colored in. Mm-hmm. And doing the stuff like the visor and then finding bits in the bag that I didn't actually glue on, so then glue them on, which worked pretty well. They were like the weird jump pack exhaust things for the back. What the hell's that about?
It's because they've got jetpacks.
Oh, that makes more sense then. So
they can jump out, shoot some stuff, and then jump back.
They're like the Tau.
They are. They are the Mechanicum Tau.
So that they were really cool and cool. Actually, after I did some work on them, I actually went back to Cole and was like, let's paint that wire as well, and let's do a bit more work on that. So I think they're not, as I said on Instagram, they're not finished, but then nothing I ever paint is finished. Like I'll look at them and go, oh, actually, I really want to paint that now, and I'll just add that little bit on, and eventually they'll get to the point where I guess I won't paint anymore. Like I don't know, Matt Space Wolves. So they'll have to be done. But no, I'm really happy with what I did achieve, and I think if I forced myself to do the Thanatar, I would have probably just done it in a Bob-like pose that Tom's done and have it trying to hug things. Like, my Thanatar would just come out like that. Like, he knows it's static. He knows he needs to do more with it.
Oh, right, okay.
Like, I think it's very easily for Forge World kits. And my Contemptor, my original Contemptor, is a prime example.
Oh, yeah.
It's very easy for Forge World kits for them to look like mimes. And just to look really unanimated and just stood still.
It takes time. That's all it is.
Yeah.
You just go, right, where do I want this arm? Right, the shoulder's going here then. Right, this forearm needs to go this diagonal way.
Yeah.
The wrist should be angled slightly down. Oh, cool. Now it looks like it makes sense.
Mm.
It's just doing that stage by stage. And that's what the blue tack's really useful for.
Yeah.
So you put together all the bits that are static, like glue the entire body together because that's not going to move.
Mm-hmm. No.
But don't glue it at the hips. You know, build the top half of the legs and the bottom half of the legs. Just don't glue them together at the knee.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that kind of thing. And then you can build it gradually with the blue tack, get your legs right, glue them together, then pose your body on top. And then your arms, and eventually you get a good pose.
Yeah, I think it's just, I think it's just that next step, isn't it? And it's I know how I want it to look in my head, but it's just figuring out how to put that into a model.
Yeah,
that's the hard thing for me. So I know I want it crouched slightly lower, bracing to its firing the giant cannon out of its right arm. Yeah.
Leaning forward slightly.
The legs, the two legs, have they got knee joints, ankle joints?
Yeah.
They're very contemptible.
Okay, fair enough.
It's so very contemptible. You can do it. And it might take a bit of like cutting forge rod a bit to get it to work, but it'd be fine. It'll work itself out.
Yeah.
It's I'll land on my feet.
Generally, we'll sit down and get it done.
Yeah, the next one's just going to be stood there like trying to hug someone. I'm sod this. I'm not doing that anymore.
Hug.
So, if you want to see them, what I've painted already, they are on our Instagram page. Please go and give it a look.
You shall see a Thanatar soon.
Maybe. And Neil.
So, my previous hobby commitment was a bit of a mistake. I said I would because I'm going to build the remaining foot-slogging Space Marines. I only thought this was about 15.
Oh, that's true.
No. This was 30.
30's not bad.
30. Yeah, but I don't... Well, I do own 30, but 15 of them are Forge World.
Yeah, and you do build very, very...
clean.
Well.
Methodically.
And clean, and which takes a long time.
And you drew your bolters.
And I drew my bolters, yes.
Yeah, so...
Although I found one that I missed.
So 30's quite a long... Yeah. Quite a number of... How many hours do you put into building models? Into building a model, like a normal contemptor?
I don't know, no.
Not a contemptor, a normal,
normal marine, like, I don't know, 20 minutes.
I literally just put the bits in a bag and shake it around.
I reckon 20 minutes from sprue to finish build.
Do you know what? I can't remember the last time I built a normal marine.
Yeah, it does. Once you've got marines, you've got your marines, haven't you?
Yeah. Don't know. What else did I do? No, I haven't. Anyway, but it is strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a build.
I don't tend to think about how long it's going to take.
No.
Like
the cat, not Castellag. These names are hard. The Thalags, actually, it was more about the paint, because I built one paint separately because it's the red, the shiny red.
Yeah.
It's the building part was such a afterthought. It was more about the painting.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I came to build them, I was just like, well, they're going to be standing up. I don't really want them to be like running like ninjas or anything like that. I don't really care that much. It's just, and they're all, yeah. I don't know. Maybe you should time it.
Interesting.
You should time it.
Time it on a, what are they called when you have like the sky move really quickly?
Time lapse.
Thank you. Do a time lapse and then you can post it on Instagram or on Facebook if it's too long.
Your iPhone will have a built-in.
Yeah, it has
way
a time lapse setting.
It's just finding somewhere to put that up. But anyway, maybe it'll happen. I don't know. But yeah, so what I did instead was I made sure I'd made 15 of them, and those 15 have been primed and base coated.
Cool. Nice. So you did what you thought you had to do.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then discovered.
Primed and base coated.
Yeah.
So they're in Dark Angel Green.
I've had some time off, yeah. Okay. But I actually base coated them this morning.
Awesome.
When? Were you here?
No.
Before he came
Before
here.
I got here.
That was like, didn't you turn up at 10?
Half 11.
Okay. There we go.
And I did that about 8 o'clock this morning.
You up early?
He's old.
Yeah. Up at 4. Bed by 6.
No, I was not up at 4. 6 o'clock, maybe. I was awake.
Too early for me. I was looking at guns at 8 o'clock.
Outrageous.
I'm going to buy a gun.
No, you're not. Let's move on from that conversation, please.
Purchases, Matthew.
Awesome. So I purchased 5 Recon Marines.
So this is all the stuff from our Forge trip.
We were at Warhammer World this month, yeah.
Was we?
We should talk about that at some point.
We weren't there this month.
Yeah,
it was January.
This month. But it was after we recorded.
Was it like the week after we
Weekend
recorded?
Weekend after
right,
we
okay,
recorded,
there we go, that's
yeah.
why then. Oh,
so it's
well.
It's been nearly a month now.
We went to Warhammer World.
We did indeed, for a day. And I bought some Forge World, as did Sam. He bought the Mechanicum items.
So how... that's why I said buy, build and paint any Forge World I buy. Okay.
Yes.
That makes sense now. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. So I got those and some Night Lord shoulder pads. That was to build my recon squad, which was the last squad I needed for my 3,000-point escalation.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a glue gun with extra glue sticks. This is for my Zone Mortalis board, to glue the plasterboard onto the Mega blocks, which has worked quite well. I had quite a lot of fun using that for the first time. You forget how kind of tricky it can be in getting all your timings right with a glue gun.
Mm.
Because I was doing big panels like on a long wall and chucking loads on, and then suddenly realized that the first half had like dried and wasn't going to stick. And you know, things like that. And you forget that it drips. So like the first drip was just onto the MDF board. And I was like, oh, need to break that off. Right, put a bit of tissue under there. I think I used an old GW box of like, I can't even remember what it was, like Marines or whatever, so that the drips could fall on that. And then I wouldn't have to pick them off of the board and maybe damage it.
Yeah.
I think what you need to do the next time is this is going really sort of like planning out to the crazy extent.
Probably won't happen then.
But if you mark out where you're going to put glue, but you only put sort of like blobs of it, so you don't do long lines, you just do a blob there, a blob there, a blob there, and do that across in 2 spots.
Yeah.
And then you can just stick it on the wall really quickly.
Okay. Yeah. That'd be good.
I mean, that might
less glue.
You waste less glue, and it'll be done quicker, so it shouldn't dry. Shouldn't harden.
Because realistically, you don't need that much glue.
No.
Hmm. Interesting.
Have you done anything? I know obviously it's made out of mega blocks, but have you done anything like sanded them down to give it a bit more purchase or anything like that?
No, not with a glue gun. It's not an issue.
It shouldn't be an issue. Yeah.
She's quite a frictionless surface.
It glues really well.
Oh, wow.
Everything so far has gone well together, pretty strong.
Give me 5 minutes with it.
Yes, true. Paint will hold it together. It's fine.
Yeah.
But yes, I bought a glue gun. That's gone quite well. And, oh no, I've just seen what the next one is. So Mark from Frost Fiend Studios.
Oh, you're painting new.
Put up on our Facebook group chat that he was in Games Workshop store and they still had one of the, or two.
Two.
Anniversary Sly Marbo models.
Does Jenny know yet?
No. No, she doesn't.
2 seconds.
No. Don't do it.
No, it's fine. Go on.
So he put up, do you want one? And I'd already shared how much I love that model and always had a bit of a thing for that character in 40K. After maybe two or three people going, go on, Matt, go on, just get it. I gave in to the peer pressure and asked him to pick it up for me. He actually forgot it today, so I still don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot the scenery that I'm giving it him for it. So it equals out. But yeah, so I now have a Sly Marbo model and now a Katachan army on the horizon.
You see, now I kept saying to Matt, you don't have to have an army to buy a model.
I do.
But apparently Matt does.
For me, it's a bit of OCD. It's a bit of just how I like to hobby. I don't know. I am an idiot. I'll happily admit that. But it's the whole idea of if I'm going to get a model, I want to build it, I want to paint it, and I want to play with it.
Mm.
And although he's a single character, I wasn't just going to throw him into a Space Wolf army or anything like that. Like, he needs some other Katachan jungle fighters. So suddenly, okay, well, I need to build a small force. Well, I do want a tank, so I don't want a Zomortalis board because I've always been in love with the old Hellhound model, which Liam was teasing me with. I've always been in love with the old Hellhound model that used to have the metal tanks on the kind of top but side.
It's a good looking model.
I always loved it. Just the shape of the flamer out the front on the turret, whole thing. So I want one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this isn't a Zomortalis list. So how small a list can I really do? I've got a 1,000-point list that I like, but it involves a Malkador Infernus, which is an amazing Forge World tank. But maybe a little bit overpowered at 1,000 points. So it may go to a 1,500-point list. I don't know yet. We shall see. But yeah, things escalate quickly with me. So
Like you keep swinging backwards and forwards between armies.
Yes. Yeah, I haven't got a real strong purchase with anything at the moment.
No.
And that's the only thing that is my Night Lords, because they're the only Heresy army I have or plan to do. At this current stage. So, I don't know. But anyway, I've got a new Sly Marbo model.
Do you know who does like swinging? Estonians.
Okay.
A guy called Ado Kosk invented a new sport called kicking, in which the participants attach themselves to a giant steel swing that rotates a full 360 degrees. It's also included in the Olympics. Yet to be included in the Olympics.
Yet to be. Oh, okay.
Nearly.
Are they trying?
Trying. But Estonians are extremely good at the Olympics. They picked up 25 medals.
In the winter?
In the summer Olympics.
Yeah, oh, no. Wow.
For such a little country.
But, yes, I have a Sly Marbo model. I don't know how we got through this ramble. But, yeah, I'm going to go away now.
Sam.
Me. Bonus. Oh, no, purchases. That's
purchases.
It. Purchases.
Still purchases.
I purchased The Devastation of Baal, the Space Marine Omnibus book for this month's coming book club.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a load of Gene Stealers and Elixir.
Oh, yes. I didn't include that into my purchases, actually.
From Matthew.
Yes, I got a drop pod and some other Tyranid organisms back.
I got the Tyranid Codex. Three Thalax, a Thanatar, a can of spray paint, a tape measure, and then a Tau drone.
Oh, yes, the Tau.
You've got two Tau drones because they come in a box of two.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I have two Tau drones. I've only built one.
Of course, you only need one.
Yeah, the other one's going to be a basing material somewhere
underneath the foot.
Yeah, it's going to. It means they're going to take his towel drone heel everywhere he goes. And that was all I purchased. Books, two books, GCs and Lictors, Tyranny Codex, Stalag Stanitar spray paint,
tape measure,
and towel drone.
I was going to say this. Cool, awesome.
The tape measure was an accident. I think I actually included that.
It was the Tyranid Codex.
Yeah.
You had a voucher.
Yeah.
You had hardly anything left after the Codex.
£5. And the only thing for £5 is tape measure. I could have bought paint, I guess.
Yeah, that would have probably been more useful. But...
Oh, well, I've got. You can never have enough tape measures, especially when like people in the group don't bring them, Tom.
That's true.
Or I break them.
Or Neil breaks
also
them.
Also true.
Yeah. Which I'll explain about later.
Okay. Good. And then Neil.
Right, so my purchase, I actually bought something.
Woohoo!
So I got a bag of a substance called Sculptor Mold, which is a casting compound that you can make heels out of, all sorts of things. I haven't used it yet, so I don't quite know what I can do with it. I've also purchased some rock molds from Woodland Scenics.
Yes, and this is what you're going to use the Sculptor stuff for.
I'm going to try it out in that as well. I've got some flocks coming as well. I forgot to mention.
No flocks given.
But
bought.
I've only purchased. These are specially designed by Luke of Luke APS. He's another YouTube channel.
Okay.
So I'm gonna
legit guy that we don't know about because me and Sam are not legit.
So yeah, I'm going to give them a go once they eventually turn up. So I've got like another couple of weeks before they arrive. I bought some purple paints. I bought some yellow paint, some orange paint, some plastic glue, some super glue activator.
Which is what?
Super glue activator. Basically, you put your super glue on. You put your two pieces together, you spray it with the activator, it instantly hardens, allegedly.
Okay.
But the bond is brittle.
Oh.
Mm.
So it's good for...
Yeah, changing out things.
Quickly putting stuff together. I think it's almost like an alcohol-based substance.
Oh, okay.
Because it says it's highly flammable.
Ooh.
Highly flammable.
You mean flannable?
Flannable.
Flannable.
Yes. Flammable.
Cool.
I also got some gloss varnish, satin varnish. I also bought a notebook to write down colour recipes in. The idea being that when I paint something, I can put down steps. Right, okay, this is what I did. This is the colour I used then. I then used a one-to-one mix of this or whatever.
Yeah, that's really useful. I do that on my phone for the way I paint my Night Lords. But obviously, if my phone dies, I'm probably in issues. But
you've also got somewhere else you can find it, so it's not.
Yeah, exactly. That's the use of having a notebook.
Obviously,
is it the GW one?
Oh no! I got this from work. Bought this at work.
The Games Workshop ones. Isn't that a battle journal?
That's a battle journal. Yeah,
to write down your games.
This is a proper notebook, an A5 notebook, hardbacked.
I think you've just taken it to a new level. I think that's going to have to go on the legitimacy scale.
It probably should do. Yeah,
a notebook.
Yeah,
like a dedicated hobby notebook.
Yes,
because I've got like hundreds of them at home. I don't use them for hobby.
I haven't got a printed title for it yet.
You need to do that.
It'll be like Neil's Black Book of Hobby Recipes.
Hobby? No, Neil's Little Black Book
of Hobby.
Of Hobby, or we could say Neil Terrain's Black Book of Hobby.
Yes, that makes sense. That makes sense.
And thus concludes my purchases.
Nice. So, bonus hobby progress then, gentlemen. We are getting through this. So, I will start with... I magnetized my Contemptor. A lot of help from Simon on this one. I won't claim to be... I just did it. But yeah, it was really fun to do. It was the plastic Contemptor from my Betrayal at Kalth box. So, I did some reposing on the hips and the legs to make it a bit more dynamic. Cut the arms just... below the shoulders.
Yep.
Shoulders are glued in place, the plastic shoulders. Cut just underneath. I use paper clips on the arms of the plastic. So I made a chain fist out of the fist.
Yep.
And the multi-melter arm that comes with the plastic dreadnought.
Mm-hmm.
And placed magnets. Can't tell you the size because Simon provided them, so I can't remember. But in the shoulders.
Yeah.
And then the paper clips are strong enough on the plastic. And then we used the, obviously, the opposite polarity of magnets in the two Forge World Volkite culverin arms that yes. I have for the dreadnought.
Mm-hmm.
So in my escalation, he's twin Volkite culverin arms.
Yep.
But obviously, when I'm playing a more tank-heavy army after the escalation, I want to have that ability. And then the same points.
Okay.
So I can put a chain fist with melter gun inside and a multi-melter on. If I'm facing, like, so Sam's army, I'll probably do that after our first game because I have to play the Volkite.
Yes.
But, yeah, so that just gives me a bit of versatility with the Contemptor.
Cool, cool.
So, yeah, it went quite well. Like, Simon helped me massively, used his Dremel and helped me put the magnets in, making sure they're the right polarity, etc. So, yeah, massive shout out to him for the thanks and help for that. I'd like to do something else now, like, and kind of try it out myself and probably take my time with it. I rushed it so that I could undercoat it with everything else.
Yeah.
So the paper clips are, they're in all right, but I could have made a neater job with it.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. You can't see it.
Well,
so it doesn't affect the end look, but I think I could have made it better. Or I could have bought magnets and put magnets in and just made it a stronger hold.
Yeah.
So the plastics, they're light enough to be held, but they're, like, very easily moved.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Whereas I would have maybe liked something a little bit more solid, which I could still do. I could easily take the paper clips out and put a magnet in. But for now, it's strong enough. The Volkite arms work perfectly.
It's a learning experience.
Exactly, yeah. I'm really happy to have done it. It was the first model I've ever magnetized.
Cool.
I think in a couple episodes' time, we're going to be talking about magnetizing.
Yes.
So possibly. We'll probably get Mark on from Phosphine Studios.
All your painting needs.
Thank you, Sam. It threw me off because it wasn't in high pitch. That was
sorry.
That's fine.
So I'll go, all your painting needs. Better.
That would have, cool. Generally, I would have probably found that more normal for some bizarre reason. But yeah, so we're going to cover magnetizing at a greater depth. But it was good to get my first model done. And like I say, thanks to Simon for making that happen. I built all my recon squad. So I bought 5. Okay. Knowing that I needed 6 for my unit, I asked to, I was going to say borrow, but I'm not really borrowing it. I asked to buy one from John, our friend John, who does a kind of his own built game. I don't know how you explain this game.
So it's a mix between Star Quest.
No, that's what we call
it. No, sorry. It's a mix between Hero Quest and Space Hulk. And Space Crusade?
Yes.
Okay, so you play as a a character from the 40K universe. So old, new, rogue trader, everything. And we play as a team, 6 or 7 of us, mate, normally. And we play against John, who has lots of Tyranids or Chaos.
Yeah, he's the dungeon master. Yeah.
So, for instance, I'm an elder on a jet bike called Pointy.
That's true,
and
yeah.
I'm a veteran space marine as well called Philippe.
Philippe Flop.
Philippe Flop. He doesn't flop.
No. I have a Flesh Terrors captain at the moment,
yep.
But he's only survived one mission, so I haven't named him yet.
You should bring Gabriel Seth.
Gabriel, he'll die straight away. Neil has been a testament of this.
Yes.
Every time you bring a model, death.
Neil,
what are you now?
I am currently the Inquisitor in Terminator armor.
Yes. The moves like crazy because he's got jump packs.
In the game, it's standard level. He's the fastest moving Terminator.
Yeah.
Is that like at 6?
Yeah.
6 base. It's a square based system, so it's 6 squares.
So think of, Space Hulk tiles.
Yeah.
You can move 4 of those tiles along normally. He can move 6, and you can get equipment to make you move faster, shoot better, melee better, whatever.
Equipment that doesn't make any sense to make you move faster, like jetpacks and stuff, but it works.
It works for the game.
Yeah, it's a simple mechanic.
Likewise, teamwork is optional.
When you are
preferred.
When you are as good as me, you do not need teamwork.
Yes. Anyway, so our friend John is mental and does this game with us, which must drive him crazy. But also buys a whole pack of Forge World minis and builds one dude from the kit. Yes.
Yeah, so his Bixbox is amazing.
Yeah, so he had four complete Recon Marines.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked to have one, like purchase one. He gave it to me for free. And then he ended up actually giving me all four of the spare guys that he had,
yeah,
which was great because then I built the sixth, went to undercoat them, looked at my list and realized I had seven in the squad. So I have built all seven. I converted their sniper rifles to be more like stalker bolters.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut them at the bolter end and cut off the thinner part of the rifle.
Yeah.
So it's more like a large suppressor on the end of a bolter now.
Yeah.
So it looks more like a stalker bolter from Space Marine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite happy with that look because they're equipped with bolters in my list. They're all undercoated ready for the airbrush. So I'm really happy with that.
Good, good.
And that's pretty much my bonus hobby. To be honest, just getting those guys built up and undercoated.
Do you know what I'm ready for? Some traditional Estonian Christmas food, the blood sausage. Served with lingonberry jam.
Ooh, and lingonberry.
And sauerkraut.
Lingonberry's
that would
nice.
That would be good right about now.
I've got a question for you.
Go ahead.
Blood sausage.
Yes.
Now, is that a pudding? Or is that a polony?
Polony.
It's polony. Okay.
Is polony what you have with roast potatoes and roasted pork?
Oh, I don't know.
Because that's what Estonians have it with.
Okay. Awesome.
But yes.
Sounds nice.
Or I'm ready to talk to you about my bonus hobby progress.
That would be good.
So I read the entirety of Devastation of Barn in about 20 hours after the book, after I got the got it.
It was 20 hours.
It was over a course of a couple of weeks. But it was amazing. It was probably one of the best 40k books I've ever read.
That's cool because it's a new book, isn't it?
Yeah.
For like moving the timeline forward.
Yeah. So the honestly, go read it. The loosely what happens, the culmination of the Shield of Baal campaign happens. All of the chapters and the second foundings and all of the children of the Blood Angels come home. And they all come to the majority of them come to aid the Blood Angels. So there's like, I think at one point they go, this is what a company or this is what it would have been like in Sanguinus's time. That's how many were there. And then the High Fleet Leviathan, one of the strongest tendrils have pushed out and they're coming for the Blood Angels. And it was very apparent that they weren't coming to the Blood Angels to get the biomass and to absorb them to progress falls. They were coming to get them, to actually kill them.
Okay.
Rather than
eliminate the threat so then it's easier for surrounding worlds after.
Because
they
were killing off they were in the Shield of Baal, they were killing off planets. So like this one bit where they go and they exterminate a planet to stop them going forwards.
It was an Inquisitor who did that once.
Yeah.
And he was excommunicate Traitorus for it, even though it massively stopped, I think it was Behemoth.
Mm. But it's okay, because Dante approved of all of this.
They're not going to do that to Dante, no. Are they?
So this happens. It's a big thing. Like, Mephiston is, like, super mega awesome in it. I love Mephiston so much. But actually, he's taken out of the battle quite early on.
Oh, cool.
You actually don't see him really fight.
Oh.
It also kind of cleared up massively about the Death Company and actually what they do to them when they're in like their mental state. They like literally just they recite this poem and they all go like into a stupor. The Tech Marines fly in and dress them in the battle plate, and then they herd them, and then the Reclusiarchs lead them into cages and basically just are kept in cages until they're ready to be used in battle, where they literally drop the cages or open a gate somewhere and they all run towards the enemy.
Yeah.
Like it was proper insane. Like and I was like, I've never read that before anywhere.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is so weird. Like this seems really actually kind of barbaric of what they're doing. But at the same time, it was needed. Like all these guys are turning Death Company and losing their mind. So what would you do? What wouldn't you do? So and then they basically conscripted the entirety of their three planets populous into the PDF.
Wow.
And then so it was pretty insane. It was pretty, some of the stuff was very un-Blood Angel like. But at that point Dante was like, no, this needs to happen. So
yeah.
Soz guys. And then obviously Robot Purple Man comes.
Robot Girly Man.
Comes at the end. Appears at the end. Appears at the end and basically makes Planetfall and helps to kill off the last of the...
He praises Dante, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's like, you are the reason this hasn't happened, this hasn't fallen.
Yeah.
And then he makes him Warden of the North. Effectively Warden of the North. It's probably a longer title than that, but Warden of the North of the Rift.
Yes.
So he's in charge of everything north of the Rift now.
Chaos is coming?
Yes. That works.
Yes, chaos is coming.
So he's in charge of everything on the north.
So he's now Jon Snow.
Well, Dante actually dies as well.
Yes.
Like, fully gets killed, and he's like...
Spoilers, by the way.
Oh, yeah, spoilers. he's like, man, thank you. Like, he's there with Sanguinus. He's like, thank you, let me die.
He's kind of having a vision.
Yeah.
It's pretty one of much at death.
Yeah. And Sanguinus is like, nah, sorry, mate.
You gotta go back.
And I imagine like one of the moments where he literally just touches his armor and just poof, like heart starts again.
Clear.
He's like, no!
Like in Bruce Almighty when Morgan Freeman touches Jim Carrey and just goes, clear. Like, what are you doing?
So yeah, very much like that's how I imagine it happening. And like, obviously, the Sanguinal turns up. The Legion of the Damned rock up as well at one point.
I need to stop. So Sanguinus is now Australian.
Yeah, basically.
So nah, mate. Going back.
Nah, mate. Time to head back.
Think you're a bit of a dick.
Got to make sure your dick's right. So they make a final charge. So though everything has fallen down, massive psychic boom, and basically Dante is leading out the surviving like couple of hundred of Blood Angels. They open the cursed tower, whatever it's called, where the most fallen Death Company are kept, and they're all like mutants and like got five arms. They're insane. And there's this one recluse arc who basically is the one who is the one guarding it, who's never been outside like in the last 100 years or whatever. And he literally steps forward, like smacks the door open, steps forward and just sidesteps a bit and just outfly all these mutant things. And then Dante leads the charge, and yeah, they're gonna get killed. They know they're gonna die at this point, but he's like, I ain't dying inside a fortress type thing. And then Legion
very Blood Angels,
and then Legion
the Imperial Fists are like, why would I die anywhere else?
And then Legion of the Damned come out of nowhere and start charging. I imagine it like the scene from Lord of the Rings with the ghosts.
Okay, yeah.
Like where they just flood in and start taking down elephants everywhere and take down Tyranids. And it was a really good book.
Sam got so excited about this that we increased his army by 1,000 points of Legion of the Damned.
Yep.
Which I then wrote for him and sent him and went, here you go, here's 1,000 points. Here's a list for you, make this happen.
I think I was texting Matt through mostly through reading this book, and I think the best moment for me was when all of the librarians that have survived are trying to get to this super psychic place in Baal, which is where they can basically contact Chaos and go and there's a demon, whatever. And there's a moment where all these Tyranids are flying after Mephiston and all the librarians in this one Thunderhawk. And Mephiston's like, whacks the button.
Oh, yeah.
The back door opens. He's like, I'll be back in a minute. And there's massive, massive wings grow. He just flies out and then does this like super psychic Seon thing where he like explodes everyone, lots of light, and yeah, he nearly dies, but at the same time, he took down like quite a lot of the flying gargoyles. So if you can't tell, I love this book.
Yeah, you have been very hyped on this book.
I love this book so much that I'm going to read it again. And
awesome.
I will make it happen that we do this as a book club and you will all read it as
that'd
well.
That'd be really cool. But we don't need to read it because you just told us what happened. Well, that only helps our notes.
Yeah. So I really like that book. There were lots of bits in it. So I did that. I wrote a 2K Tyranid list. We did that at Forge World.
Didn't we?
At Warhammer World.
Yeah, so I was sitting quickly, in Bugman's bar.
I'll quickly run through it. So it's a Hive Tyrant with wings, with two Death Spitters and Slimer Maggots. A Broodlord. One squad of 30 Hormigants, one squad of 30 Termigants, three Tyranid Warriors, a squad of 20 Gene Sealers and a squad of 10 Gene Sealers. Being led by a Lictor, and then Trigon Prime and two Screamer Killers. That's 1,500 points.
to Carnifexes?
Yes. Yeah. Screamer. So in the Codex now, you can have Carnifex.
Mm-hmm.
You can have Screamer Killers, which are all with Siven Talons, like monstrous Siven Talons, and they have a special rule where I think like morale's got a minus effect in the morale checks because they're very screamy and scary. And there's a third one, which I can't remember the name, but it's like the Crushing Claw Tank Hunter version, the classic version. So it's really cool. So you can either take Carnifexes, build them exactly the same as Screamer Killers for cheaper, but you don't get that bonus special rule. So yeah, we put them in as Screamer Killers because they're awesome.
Can you still get the classic model for Screamer Killers?
I don't know, but yeah, they're a lot smaller than normal Carnifexes.
I have 98 models in my 1,500 points.
Hang on, this says wrote a 2K to list.
Yes,
you mean 1,500?
I meant 1,500. Yes. 98 models.
That's not bad.
Not bad for 1,500 points.
Yeah.
And then my last thing I did that was bonus is I built my Tau drone. So, bit of background, why I bought Tau. It was traumatic.
I didn't believe him.
I've joined a support group.
Did you not see? So, Sam posted up to our group that he'd bought some Tau. No one believed him, so they then put up the receipt picture covering up what he had bought Tau on top of the Tyranid Codex, but on a page where there is some Tau artwork. And it was like, has he bought a Tau Codex? Everyone suddenly thought he bought the Tau Codex.
I'm sitting there thinking, there is no Tau Codex.
Exactly, because it's due next month.
Everyone else was like, no, he's bought a Tau Codex. I was like, okay.
There isn't a Tau Codex, but okay. And then it was like, oh, what is it? Did you get a Riptide? What did you buy?
I bought some drones. So the reason I bought some drones is because they are going to form my cyber familiar for Call, because he's equipped with one. So my other...
Because he's your Archmagos Dominus, isn't he?
He's my Archmagos Dominus.
Of
my
Mechanicum Force.
Current Magos Dominus is going to be downgraded. Current Archmagos Dominus is going to be downgraded to a Magos Dominus. So I needed a new cyber familiar. So I thought, a drone. So I've kind of Imperiumed it a little bit. Put a couple of antenna on it, and I've put an Aquila on it as well, and so it'll work itself out, it'll be fine.
It's very clearly Tau, but at the same time, like, Tau aren't around at this stage in the history.
It's
a drone that maybe the Imperium have created, and
maybe my Archmagos Dominus was the person who created the Tau.
Yes.
Or created the Ethereals.
Yes.
Ooh. Probably not.
Anyway, that's my bonus hobby progress. Neil?
Awesome. Right, so my bonus hobby progress, which I've added to today.
Awesome.
I built both the chaplain and the captain from Betrayal
of
Outbox.
The two characters, yeah.
In sub-assemblies. Because I wanted to test out some paint schemes.
I don't know what this word means.
Sub-assemblies is where you build them in pieces rather than complete, and so you can get to areas that you wouldn't normally get to.
Makes complete sense.
So things like the cloak.
Yes.
So you can have it painted how you want it, and it looks awesome.
Like, you know all that time you struggled to paint the Aquila on the chest of a space marine because there's a bolter in the way? That.
Yeah, I just don't glue the bolters on.
But just
very slight slab assembly.
So we did that. The chaplain's been painted up, and I've had a mess around with purples, hence buying purples. I even did testers of different mixtures of purple to see which one would come out the best.
Cool.
And so I've written down in the book.
Yeah. And this is cape?
This is for the armour.
Oh.
I've got the cape's fine.
I'm really confused. Why are you doing purple armour?
Well, you never know why.
Because purple's the best colour ever.
No, but generally, like, have you got a plan for this purple, or you just decided, I'm going to do purple?
I might have a plan.
Okay.
I might not have a plan.
That's fine.
He doesn't have a plan.
There is no plan. That's
I have no plan.
I'm just really confused working out a colour that you're not going to use. It's confusing.
Well, I'm actually going to use it on, you know, those power generators I have? The Tau ones.
Yes.
I can use it on them because it looks really good.
Nice.
And it's a bit different from, say, the red, the blue, the green. It's just a little bit.
Yeah.
And it looks really good.
Nice.
But anyway, so I've done that. And today, whilst I was at the bunker, I was terraining.
You were
and
indeed.
I posted up a picture of one of the hills that I've carved up from my expanded foam meringue.
Which is such a funny phrase. It's completely true, but...
So yeah, that's my bonus hobby progress.
Awesome. Well, we all did bonus and completed.
We all bought something.
We all bought something. We all did something towards our hobby commitment.
And
I completed.
We all played a game.
Yes.
And I've played two.
Okay.
My notes say one, but I have played two.
Okay. So do you want to do the one that wasn't against me and I'll do the one against me?
Yes, that's what I thought. So I played two games. One game was against Sam. And was Shadow War. Sam will cover that because I think, is that your only game of this one?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
I also played a Zone Mortalis 8th edition game with Timothy, our friend Tim.
Did you, by any chance, time the game?
No, we didn't. No, that didn't happen.
It's because he's worried. Because he knows I'm going to beat him.
So I played my Gene Stealer 500 points, which is 24 Gene Stealers, a Broodlord, and a Lictor. And he played his Custodes, which was, I think, three Custodes, Ixion Hail character, and a Contemptor Dreadnought.
Are they gold?
They are all gold.
Ooh.
They are. Nothing other than sprayed gold, but that's something.
They've got paint on them.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Well done, Tim.
Indeed. We played round at his house. He used the Necromunda tiles, the Zone Mortalis tiles, which were great. And we used some scenery to kind of help us just see where the walls were a little bit more effectively.
Yeah.
Use containers and walls.
Yeah.
Bits like that. So that was really cool. And we basically, over the week before, were messaging each other, kind of trying to 8th edition up Zone Mortalis, because it hasn't been done yet. And I think we've come to a cool kind of simple version. You know, I'm expecting Games Workshop will do it soon and we'll get that and we'll just run with that.
Yep.
But for now, this is something that we can play and just enjoy.
Yeah. So
we just played a simple kind of kill point mission. It was really fun. Gene Stealers felt very scary because they all made combat because they were hiding around corners and making certain charge distances using High Fleet Kraken, allowing them to advance using the highest of three dice rather than just one.
Yeah.
And being Gene Stealers, they can charge after advancing. And they move 8 inches already. So I think I moved something like 24 inches in one turn for a charge. Which is very quick.
Yeah.
Just felt like, although they're squads of eight, I've got three squads of eight.
Yeah.
So that's quite small. But because they weren't getting shot to pieces across an open board, seven made it into combat, or six made it into combat, or even five. And you get that feel of these very nasty combat beasts, which they are. So that was really cool. I loved that. And it was a really fun game. It kind of came down to just whether his Custodes could make their very good saves against lots of dice, and if I could save with my Invul saves, because Gene Stealers now have Invul saves. Yay!
Woo!
Which was awesome. Yeah, very, very excited. So it was a really fun game. Like, it was very simple, 500 points, pretty much just a brawl in the middle of the board with a few outflanking units, like nothing crazy different. Things to mention about Zone Mortalis, some things we just ignored and changed, maybe. And we're still in development stage, shall we say, because there's still some things we were trying to work out. But for simple fact, we pretty much kept all the same. We just played normal detachments. We included three command points.
Uh-huh.
So we still had that mechanic, because although we were playing such small numbers, we didn't have the detachments to give us the command points.
Yep.
So we just went, right, match play gives you three standard. We'll just rob that for our Zone Mortalis game.
Yeah.
And that was quite cool because it meant you got the rerolls and you could interrupt charging and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. What else did we do? Obviously, you used to be able to overwatch using initiative tests. So if you passed an initiative test previously in Zone Mortalis, you could overwatch on your full ballistic skill. So me and Tim obviously realized initiative's not a thing in 8th edition.
Yeah.
So we needed a new kind of format. So what we decided to do is each player would roll a single d6, add the leadership of the unit that is rolling.
Yep.
So his Custodes, Leadership 8 or 9, whatever they were, and Gene Stealers are 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
And we would add that together. And whoever got highest would get the outcome. So if me, as the attacking Gene Stealer, got the higher, then he had to overwatch a normal snapshot.
Yep.
And if he beat me on his roll, then he would get to overwatch a full ballistic skill.
What is the current Overwatch rules?
Same sixes.
Oh, is it? They've kept that. They brought that across with them.
Okay. Yes, yeah. There's some units that can do it on fives and sixes if they do. Like, I think there's guard order and things that can affect it. But yes, pretty much exactly the same. So we kept a kind of mechanic very simple. Involved both players. Kind of made sense to us, like the leadership, the discipline in the unit. So we were thinking, you know, orcs that have a lower leadership are more likely to get, you know, beaten on that. So if they're charging in, they're more likely to get shot. Well, they're going to be loud and brutish. They're not exactly stealthy.
Mm.
And vice versa, if they're being charged, they're less likely to be in a disciplined rank of fire. You know, half of them will be reloading. Half of them won't have their pistols even drawn.
Yeah.
You know, so it made sense. The higher the leadership, the more disciplined, the more likely they were to either intercept the Overwatch and attack before they got a chance to get their decent shot off, or for the defender to be disciplined enough to realize we're about to be charged, let's shoot at our better.
Yeah.
They're just more ordered and able to get that better shot off.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked quite well. That was really fun to just throw in as a new mechanic.
Cool.
And I'm trying to think of anything else. I don't think we changed too much. We took out, just ignored any kind of template or blast weapon, because they used to get special rules in 7th.
Yeah.
They don't exist. So rather than giving flamers a re-roll of the D6, which we talked about, we just decided 8th edition's about speed and simplicity. We just cut it out. We may put it back in, but in the 8th edition language. Not sure how we're going to do that yet. But yeah, we're just playing around with the rules of Zone Mortalis to make it a fun game.
Roll 2D6 and pick the highest.
Yeah, that's not a bad way of doing it, especially for like flamers that you get D6 hits. Yeah, but it was a really fun game. I enjoyed it. Gene Stealers felt really, really fluffy. I can't wait to play another Zone Mortalis board.
Good.
Go ahead. Yeah, do go next.
Oh, okay. I've got two games, so...
Oh, okay. Yeah, you go first. Do one, and then I'll do the next.
Okay. First game. In fact, I've played two games. It's just crazy.
It's insane. Anyway. When you were playing, like when you were talking about it on the group, I was like, no, Neil doesn't play games. Neil barely paints.
But he does terrain.
But he does terrain.
first game I played against Mark of Frostfiend Studios.
For all your painting needs.
For all your painting needs. And I was... both games I had were 30k games. So I was playing my Salamanders and Mark was playing his Night Lords. We got, missions-wise, we got the Vanguard Strike, which is the diagonal deployment, and a mission type called the Shattering, where you basically, you start in your deployment, he starts it, and you have to go and take theirs.
Oh, okay. So like,
so you're basically supposed to swap sides, but stop them getting to your deployment zone.
And do you get points per unit in there?
Yes.
Cool. So something like my army would super suck at that one, because I only got like 4 units.
Yeah, and I think it needs to be scoring units or something.
Oh, like wow, that. Okay, that's even worse.
That was a bit of a whitewash for me, really.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. It was a combination of bad rolling, possibly didn't think about my deployment as much as I could have done.
He is also a better player than you as well, so...
That could be a factor.
That was a joke, but he's not a better gamer than you. But he's had a lot more Heresy games.
Yeah.
He tends to play a lot of...
He plays.
Yeah, he really plays.
This is the first game I've played in ages.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a whitewash. I think Mark was unlucky in a couple of roles where he was trying to take out the Typhon with las cannons, and he just fluffed the rolls big time. So I lucked out there, but other than that, I was left with the Typhon and two models on the board.
Not so good then.
No, not so good.
And then your next game is against Chris?
My next game is against Chris, and he was playing his Word Bearers. And we used the open war cards rather than picking a mission from the books. I actually really enjoyed this because it was more options, but it's random. So I shuffled the cards up and I was like, all right, Chris, you pick one.
Yeah.
And then you pick one of these. And we'll pick one of these. And do you want to have one of these or one of these? We're like, no. Okay, right. So we've got the mission, the deployment, and the whatever the other card was that we used. Okay, so the cards were, the deployment was one person deploys in the middle in 18-inch zone.
Yep.
And then the other person has two deployment zones, either one deployment zone either side.
Quite a tricky one.
This is like a Heresy game that you've played before, I think. Didn't you have a game where your knights were in the middle and you got attacked from both sides by Chris?
Not really attacked, but that's fine.
No, but yeah, that was a thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, so these are the... that as a card one is pretty cool. It's actually... like I'd prefer to be in the middle. I'd prefer to be in the middle and defend one zone rather than deploy from two separate.
I think it worked out to be easier in the end. Yeah. We then picked up... Sorry, Field of Glory. Right, so Field of Glory is three objective markers... one in the centre and then one each in your deployment zones.
Cool. Hang on, if your deployment zones are in the centre...
So you've got two in the centre.
Yeah.
So hang on, but haven't they got to be like 6 inches away from each other?
Yes.
12.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
12 inches away. Okay, so it's basically one on either side of you.
Yeah, well, only one has to be in your deployment zone.
One was in the middle.
Yeah.
Dead bang in the centre, and the other one was 12 inches away from it.
Okay.
And yeah, the idea is you capture the objectives. If somebody captures all three objectives before the end of the game, the game's over.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Oh, man. That was so good. I was going to park a knight on each of them.
You and your knights.
And then the twist, which is what I thought the Field of Glory was called Meeting Battle.
Right.
Yes. And you split your army up into three parts. The first contingent is deployed at the start of the game. And then the second contingent arrives at the end of your movement phase. And then the third contingent turns up at the end of your third movement phase.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure me and Sam have had that before. Was it our doubles game?
Nah, probably.
I remember, I think we had to split our force three ways.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You did. So, same. Yeah.
Which is a really interesting sort of, you have to really think, right, okay, what are we going to start with on board? Typhon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I find this really interesting that you use an open war for Heresy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, awesome, but just, you know, I found it really interesting.
We've had this discussion before where you were saying about, wow, there's so many missions and six missions and...
Well, yeah. I haven't played enough Heresy where I've played all of the basic missions.
Yeah.
So I want to play those before I touch Open War, even though they're transferable nice and easy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's just how I feel about it. I'm not against them.
It might be that there's a mission like that in the books.
Yeah. The deployment there definitely is.
I wouldn't be too surprised in the making of the open war cards that they've looked at all of the events they've hosted, all of the other rules packs like Heresy and the old editions, and gone like what deployments were cool and what worked, like put them in.
Yeah.
What objective type things work, put them in. What twist type thing, because they've got, although these are great and these cards are fantastic, they've got what, X amount of years to pull on of previous events. Yeah.
Well, think of like battle missions.
Yeah.
You know, half of it's probably from the battle missions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They've got so much stuff they can pull from.
Yeah,
so.
The only thing I've got against them, as they've been a bit more kind of used readily and I've played a few games with them, is that they are very random. And although that's fun for just, let's play and see what happens. Like, I think if regularly we were randomly pulling... You can only shoot 12 inches away and it slowly extends, which was one we had in our double game. I think I'd be like, well, like that Laz Cannon team is pointless now. And that's fine as a one-off, but if I kept getting it, I'd be frustrated. Yeah. Now, there's quite a large choice, so the likelihood is low. But those kind of random rules can sometimes deter from the game.
Do you know how you could counterbalance that? Just play more games.
Yeah.
Play more games.
Or just... Yeah. say, oh, I played that recently. Do you mind if we draw again?
Yeah, no one's going to go, no, we drew the card.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Fire Raptors for a pain.
Yes, indeed.
I can kind of just ignore them or shoot Bar Preds at them.
They've got like one heavy bolter left. Don't rain. Shut up.
but it was that was a good game.
Do you have any anti-air?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
See, I only have one unit that does anti-air in mine. Like, hasn't Chris got like five, six?
I don't have any anti-air in mine either.
You have another flyer.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's not what I. It's got bombs on it. Like, it's got one twin lit las cannon, but it's really there to bomb the hell out of the infantry on the floor.
But you don't take the negative. You don't take the negative to your, because you're in the air, don't you? So you don't. What? There's no negative to your BS because you're in the air. So your las cannon is more likely to hit.
Oh yes, yeah. I've got something that's a bit better than shooting up at the sky. Yeah,
yeah.
But I did manage to hit it once with a missile launcher.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very lucky. But yeah, no, it was a good game. I enjoyed it.
Do you know Estonia is the least populated country in the European Union?
Wow.
My game. So Matt and I played. This is our...
they can't see the hand gesture.
That's fine. It's for you and me.
Oh,
it's for
you and me. I was in the
There's
moment.
A wall there.
There is. Matt and I played our Shadow War game. And basically, the mission for Shadow War was pretty much just kill each other.
It was.
It was quite good. So Matt plays orcs in Shadow War. We've shared our list before. Do you have your list on you?
I can vaguely remember it.
Okay, so go vaguely reel off your list.
So I have a boss knob with a power claw.
Yep.
I had four orcs with slugger chopper, so combat.
Yep.
Two with shooters, who were my youths or recruits in the way that Shadow War lists work.
Yep.
And then I had a... can't remember what the next one is. It's not specialist because you buy them in. But anyway, I had a rocket boy who stands on high things and shoots things with
heavy
rockets. No, I can't remember the name of the slot. Like, you have troopers, recruits,
something. And
yeah.
I
can't remember what that one is. And
troopers, recruits, and specialists. Yeah, special operatives, which you buy in.
That's it, sorry. So, yes, a specialist as in a rocket boy.
Yeah.
Right.
And then special operatives you buy in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in mine, I had an Inquisitor called, I think it was Gabriel Lucifer.
Yes, that's right.
Inquisitor Gabriel Lucifer. I had Operative S, which is my sniper rifle, which is a trooper who has basically got a sniper rifle, red dot laser sight, telescopic sight. He's built to be an assassin, and I used an assassin model for him. I've got two Inquisitorial initiates with bolt guns and red dot laser sights, and so they're quite cool. And then I have two specialists, which are Crusaders, which I've built as they've got power maws and power and storm shields. So I've basically got my Inquisitor, an assassin, two of my Anvil Industries guys, which played at Warhammer World, two Ogryn, my Ogryn Inquisitors.
Oh, okay.
So we had our
Ogryn Inquisitors.
Yeah, they're Ogryn Inquisitors. No, they're like super smart. No, they're Ogryn. They're Ogryn versions of Crusaders, which they are in this. So
can they count up to five?
No, they can't. Only four.
Oh, that's smart.
So how many digits do they have?
So Matt and I played. The game. The mission was pretty much just kill each other. The board was, we're at Warhammer World, so it was quite a nice board, very industrial, on one of the industrial tiles, lots of multi-level terrain.
Yeah, they built them for kind of Necromunda or Shadow War games, actually. Yep. We were in that area.
Yep.
There's a whole area of like Zone Mortalis now,
yep,
and Necromunda-style industrial boards with the new scenery kits.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a whole kind of corner for that gaming.
Yeah.
What did we play on when we went?
We played on the crazy big mining display board thing. That feels very Necromunda / Shadow War, but these are like general tables with general terrain, in that style of industrial, dirty, grimy, or Zone Mortalis for playing Necromunda or Shadow War.
Okay, cool.
So they're all 4x4s as well.
So in true Sam fashion and Orc fashion, we pretty much just ran at each other.
Indeed.
My sniper guy was trying to sniper his rocket guy, and pretty much just did nothing.
And my rocket guy shot rockets at his sniper guy and did nothing.
Yeah. We did play it a bit wrong.
Yes, there were a few rules we did get wrong.
Yeah, there was like some, like you getting up and stuff. Mm. We didn't do as much as what we should have. I won in the end. It's a campaign, so it's not really winning. You just get caches and Promethean stuff, and you reduce some rolls on tables. And
yeah, so you advance your character who survives. And the guys that die, you have to roll on injury tables to see if they actually die or come back, but with an injury that can sometimes work out better for them for some bizarre reason.
Yeah. So I've pretty much just got two new guys, two new troopers.
Yes. Nice. So you get points as well. So you get 100 points for playing, and then you can trade in your Promethean caches for 100 points each, or use them to buy special operatives.
Yeah. So I have pretty much Operative Alpha Bravo and Charlie Delta with my new recruits, and then Operative C Alpha and C Beta, which is Crusader Alpha and Crusader Beta.
Oh, okay.
Beta. So yeah. So it was a good game. I really enjoyed it. I quite liked it. It was quite quick. It probably wasn't helped by the people that are around us like a lot, so it probably would have been quicker. But it was good. I quite like Shadow War. It's a quick game to mess around with.
As soon as you get the rules down, it is very quick.
Yeah.
Because it is a very different game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It feels very different. Yeah. You know, charging's done first and things like that.
And you have
to put yourself on Overwatch rather than shooting so that you can be on Overwatch next turn, which is very Space Hulk-like.
So if people run between cover and stuff, cover really matters for your hit rolls. So it was good. It was a really good game. I had another one against Chris, or another two against Chris after. So I have played more than just against you. And again, same list. He had lots more. He was the Imperial Guard, I think.
Yes, he's playing Guardsman.
So his were a lot more... his was very similar to yours in terms of like the downs and stuff. The snapshotting and the overwatching really come into play with your if you can't shoot, basically you should go in Overwatch, because you can, if someone runs across, you can. And there's some, like, in my opinion, weird mechanics about running from cover to cover. You get like super, you get like bonuses on the to hit roll. Sorry, the negatives on to hit roll if you're running from cover. If you're like, we're in cover, you're going to cover, you're running and it's less than a certain distance, then pretty much it's like a 7-up to hit. It's really hard.
Sorry, it's someone shooting at you.
No. If you're overwatching and the person running has done all those things, then it basically becomes quite impossible.
Well, it makes sense because surprisingly,
it plays a lot more on moving targets, which from a real world point of view makes sense. It does make sense. I think it was the way. It was just a little explained. Strange. Yeah.
And because your last game was me just running straight at you and ignoring all terrain.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, what an orc would do, but just because I didn't really understand the rules.
So it's interesting. It is interesting.
I'm looking forward to next month's game. It's our league of this year.
Yeah.
So
that's my game.
Awesome. Cool. We've had a good month.
We have indeed.
I'm impressed. So much activities that's taken an hour and a half.
We've each had like two games. Mm. We've all hit bonus hobby progress. Yeah, it's been good. Right, we're going to take a break and come back with our second segment.
Hi, this is Mark from Frostfiend Studios. We specialise in painting Warhammer armies. If you want to know more about what we do and our services, please take a look at our Facebook page, Frost Fiend Studios, or our website, frostfiend.com. Look forward to seeing you there.
So welcome back. This is the Warp Storm, and we've got a bit of a reshuffle for you. So we're changing things up on the podcast. We like to keep things fresh and different. And we're going to change the way that we do Warp Storms, and I'll give you kind of a reason why. The Warp Storm is fickle, as you already know, being part of this 41st millennium. Sometimes we are bombarded by awesome content, and sometimes the warp is very calm and still. To adapt to this, our navigator, who we shall call Sam.
It makes complete sense.
Why not?
And I've got a hot cup of Glog, which is Estonian mulled wine.
Ah. Nice. has given us a new pathway through the warp storm. So basically, what we're going to be doing now is every two or three episodes, depending on how much content you guys are sending us and input you guys are sending us, we will cover a warp storm segment. What we're going to do instead is basically elongate our news from Terra to maybe go into more details of rules, tactics, painting techniques, going into more depth in what we've been up to.
Like we've done this month.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully a little bit more succinct and in some kind of decent order.
No.
Oh, damn. There's always hope. But yeah, so, you know, sometimes we get two or three months worth of stuff all in 1 week, and I put that all into our notes, and great. And sometimes it can dry up, and we're really having to search for ideas and input from you guys.
Then we get left out in the cold because people don't send us stuff. And talking of cold, temperatures can drop down to minus 35 in the coldest months in Estonia.
That's rather chilly.
Mm. So what we are doing with the warp storm is I will still be collating pain and joys because that's something we've done from pretty much the outset of the podcast. Mm-hmm. And we still like that idea. We are still asking for your warp storm questions as well. What we will do is we'll stack them up. And when I feel like we've got enough to cover a decent segment length, we will do a shorter news from Terra and cover multiple people's pain and joys and warp storm questions. That may take just two episodes. It may take three, four, however much input we get from you guys.
Yep.
We love the warp storm segment. We didn't want to throw it away because we love covering the things you want us to cover and have your say on the podcast. Ultimately, we do this to engage with other people who love the hobby that we do. And we love to hear the real life stuff of what you're struggling with and what you're enjoying in the pain and joys. And also the questions you have and you want or think are funny for us to discuss. So we still want those things coming in. And when we feel like we've got enough, then we'll throw out a segment to you guys. And so, yeah, up to you. Either send us a load of input and we'll carry on doing it every month because that's how much we're getting. Or what's more likely is every two, three episodes we will have a warp storm segment with multiple people's input. So alongside the warp storm questions and pain and joys that you guys keep sending us, and we'll collate into this new kind of bumper pack warp storm episode, we will now be asking you guys a question. And we'll be doing that through a poll on Facebook and asking you guys your opinions. And then we'll discuss the answers and the different percentages on the poll. So the first one is going to be your favourite army aesthetically.
And are you talking 30k or 40k?
40,000. We are a 40k podcast.
Yes, we are.
So we love the Heresy and we are partaking in the Heresy. And more I'm falling in love with Heresy gaming. But we'll stick with the 40k factions. So this is your Orcs, Dark Elder, Eldar, Tyranids, Necrons, Space Marines, Primaris Marines, probably separate to that. Think would be nice.
Yeah.
I think the joys with a Facebook poll is you can add options if we miss anything. Most Facebook polls you mm-hmm. can add an extra one.
Yes, indeed.
So that will be up on our Facebook page. I think Sam's kind of doing it now. and you guys can vote on that, and that will be shared in the same episode as the pain and joys and the Warpstorm questions. So it may run for just a 1 month. If we get loads of input, it might run for two or three. It will just run until we do a warp storm, and then we will put out and announce our next poll. So if you want to engage with us, get onto Facebook, join that poll, and we will look forward to discussing the outcome.
Alternatively, you can email us as well.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, yeah. If you don't have Facebook but want to put that opinion across, then do email us. And our email is theadeptusterrapodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, get in touch with us. Send us your pain and joys, warp storm questions, and your poll opinions to the question. So this one, the favorite army aesthetically.
And you can also do this via Instagram.
You can indeed message us on Instagram if mm-hmm. if that's the only social media you kind of engage with.
And if that's the only social media you engage with, good for you.
I do love Instagram.
You're doing it right.
So yes, hopefully you will enjoy this new way of doing the warp storm. We're looking forward to keeping it in, keep talking about your input. I think the questions is a new cool thing that we've added. And yeah, we'll just see where it goes from here. It might die out and become further and further apart as we're getting less and less input, or it might suddenly blow up after this episode and suddenly it's back every month. Who knows? But we want to be fluid and we want to put out something that you will enjoy.
Awesome. Right. So, guys, that's our new way of doing the Warp Storm. As we've mentioned, send in your questions, your pain and joys, and fill out our poll. We're going to take another. We are going to take another quick break and come back with our third segment, the 40K Spotlight.
Hi, it's Deathwatch Tom. I just want to tell you all about the Frayed Paintbrush Hobby Progress Facebook group. It's a positive group set to motivate us to hobby and then share amongst all the other members. At the beginning of the month, post your monthly challenge on the page, and at the end of the month, you can post your completed work for all to see. No pressure, just fun amongst friends. Hope to see you there.
That was an abrupt end of that advert, Sam.
It wasn't an abrupt end. It was a 3-second fade.
Edit better. So here we are, 40K Spotlight. And today we are covering the Necron dynasties, or dynasties. You will probably hear it said both ways, probably by me. Get over it. We do mispronounce things on this show. We try it really hard not to.
You wait for the first dynasty.
I was going to say, there's lots of opportunities in this to mispronounce everything.
It will happen a lot. I'm sorry. So we're covering what a Necron dynasty is, very briefly, and then we're going to talk about all of them. Because I was on some mad hype at the time. I don't know what was going through my mind.
It's fine. It's like one or two lines about each of them.
Yeah, there isn't that much across the two different codexes and what we can find online. You know, from the 5th edition codex, a lot of these come from, as well as the 7th edition. Obviously, haven't got an 8th edition one yet.
Nope.
Maybe we'll get some new ones. Maybe some of these will be deleted. We shall see. But anyway, Necron dynasties are the former great houses of the Necron tier. They were entities of allegiance for every Necron. So that's from warrior all the way to Faerun. Their allegiance to a dynasty was once purely a matter of family and tradition, but is now entrenched through conquest and programming. Before the coming of the Catan, they were many hundreds of Necron tier dynasties because they were based off family lines. But through the wars of succession, the war in heaven, and the rebellion against the Catan, many of these dynasties were destroyed. It is impossible to say how many survived, though the number is likely in the hundreds.
It's like Space Marine chapters.
Yeah. Shocking.
There's a dynasty for every colour scheme you can think of.
Yes. Yeah.
You want to paint them blue? Dynasty.
Yeah. If you want to paint a blood drop on their shoulder, there's one for that too.
Yeah. The thing is, I found the dynasty is really interesting because, I mean, one of the ones I cover later have a cool potential allied group.
Mm-hmm.
So it really opened up to me the kind of different flavors of Necrons, the different way they fight, and, yeah, color schemes. So these, you know, I always used to think Necrons, spray them silver, done. But there's so many other different colour schemes, different markings, different dynasties.
Yeah.
Oh, that's one thing I didn't actually get on all of mine is the colour scheme for them.
I didn't
know. There was normally on most of the pages, at least on like Lexicarnum and things like that we use.
Yeah.
There's like the colour scheme picture.
See, unfortunately, none of them had that on my ones.
Yeah, so a lot of them don't. They are in the codexes as well. Like, I didn't particularly mention any.
Does that mean if there's not a colour scheme, we can just make it canon and just say there is one? It's like, their colour scheme is pink.
Yes, these are the pink Necrons. No, I don't think so. We haven't massively focused on their colour scheme, but you can see them in the different codexes and some online. So Google it if you like the sound of them, I guess. Anyway, since the Silent King destroyed the protocols of control over the Necron race, I always feel like with the Necrons, by the way, it's mumbo-jumbo alien stuff I don't understand.
Yeah, future
like
robot stuff.
Yeah, so there's like Wars of Succession, the War in Heaven, Rebellion against the Catan. They're all very big things that we could have covered. That's three spotlights right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, since the Silent King destroyed the protocols of control over the Necron race, the Necron dynasties now act independently from one another and pursue their own agendas. Each dynasty is ruled over by a Necron overlord, while the most powerful dynasties, ones which encompass an entire sector of space, may be ruled over by Faerons. Currently, the Sortek dynasty is the most powerful of the Necron race, and that's Imatek the Stormlord's dynasty.
It's my one, I think.
Yeah, I think you've got that. So we are actually going to cover all of the dynasties that we could find. So that's 31 in total. I believe it might be 30 because there was one that I originally had that had no information. It was just literally the name of a dynasty. But yeah, so hopefully you enjoy this. Hopefully you get to see the different flavors and approaches of the Necron race. For me, just doing the ones I did, it really fleshed them out, which is not really supposed to be a pun.
flayed one.
Yeah. But yeah, it really made them feel like a race that I could get behind, choose my way of playing them, and do it. Whereas before, they were just, oh, every Necron army is the same. Whereas this, the background and learning more about them really kind of brought them to life for me.
I definitely think Necrons are quite cool.
They are. I'm sure by the end of this, at least one of us will want to do a Necron dynasty.
What army can I get rid of to do Necrons?
Blood Angels?
Nah.
No, not after Devastation of Baal. Are you crazy? It'll be Tyranids, just after he finishes painting the last one.
Like, I have to sell a 1,500-point fully painted Leviathan force. Nah.
Right.
It'd be more likely to be Chaos. And more likely to get rid of my Chaos for.
Yeah. We'll see.
Cool. So I'm actually starting. So
you are indeed.
I have Agdgath.
Agdgath.
Agath dynasty. The Agdgath dynasty are a dynasty of the Necrons located in the Segmentum Tempestus. For those of you who don't have a map, wherever they go, the south. The Segmentum Tempestus is the south of the galactic map, near worlds like Krieg, Talon, Barbaeus, Barbarus. Sorry,
Barbarus.
Barbados. Barbarus. So in 989.m41, the dynasty abandoned the world of Tai after it was overrun by the Flayed Ones. That's pretty much the only thing on them, but I thought I'd go into what the Flayed Ones were.
Yeah, that's good for people who don't know Necrons.
Yeah, I didn't know. So the Flayed Ones are Necrons who have succumbed to the Flayer virus of the Shaitan Liedgar.
Landugor.
That is not how you say Landigor.
That is Landu.
That's like driving through Wales. It's a double L. That's the type of like.
That's a double L.
It's a double L.
Oh, okay. It looks like an I from Wales.
So that's Landugor.
That's like when you, like I said, when you drive through Wales. And you're like, well, it's like, welcome to Landigor.
Yeah. Cardiff.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the virus, so the Flay virus, a process which drives Necrons insane. With hunger for blood and gore, obviously, blood angels. They wear the skin and body parts of their opponents, spreading mass terror across enemy lines.
They're night lords. So they're blood angel night lords in metallic skin.
Yes.
Yeah, and their color scheme is silver.
Yep.
With a bit of green.
And maybe some pink.
Maybe some pink there somewhere, like on the bottom of their foot. And that is all I have about them.
Cool.
Awesome. So what I do have is that a common New Year's tradition for Estonia is Onja Valamine, or the pouring of luck. Lead is melted over a stove and in a metal ladle and then is poured quickly or slowly into ice cold water. What appears are interesting lead figures which can tell you your fortune of the upcoming year. Mm. Much like Necrons.
Okay.
Neil, or you?
Living metal. Yes. Right, so I've got the Atun Destiny. Destiny?
Destiny, yeah.
No, it's Destiny 2. yes, the Atun Dynasty. The Atun Dynasty rules many tomb worlds in the northern galactic rim. So we're going right up the north of the map. It's ruled by Faeron Atun, that's very convenient, and it is known to contain many ancient wonders. It's also the birthplace of the Necrontyr.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
With many tomb worlds waiting to be awoken.
What's a Necrontyr?
They are the race themselves.
The original race.
Before they fell.
Okay.
And became mindless metal servants.
Right.
Most of them.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
I feel like I should know more about Necrons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, good luck pronouncing this one, Matt.
Yeah, I just realised I shot myself in the foot here. So the Out Timor dynasty. They're a Necron dynasty based in the Segmentum Obscurus. So this is the same area of space as Cadia. It's kind of in the centre of everything. It's ruled over by the Overlord Vitok. The dynasty has demonstrated a desire for non-Necron slaves. This is one of my favourite ones, by the way. As demonstrated when they overran and enslaved the Imperial Hive World of Ariand. I thought this was a really cool idea, because you could suddenly have a narrative reason to play Necrons with Allied Guard.
Yeah.
And there's a few caveats to that. If it was me, I'd be taking conscript squads, because these aren't high-end Imperial Guard guys. These are slaves that you put a rifle in their hand.
Yeah.
So conscript squads mainly, maybe some heavy weapon squads, because they've found those guns or killed the previous users.
You could just use the guys from Gene Seed Occult, because they're very, the non Gene Seedified ones, like the everyday guys. They'd be good.
Yes. Yeah. What, in terms of model wise?
Models and stat lines, I guess.
Yeah, I'd probably just use Guard.
Yeah.
You know, because I think conscripts have a slightly lower ballistic skill and weapon skill than normal Guard infantry squads.
Okay.
I think there's something less of a conscript. So I'd say, like, conscripts only, don't play any veterans, you know, but you could use heavy weapon squads because the guys could pick up those guns and reuse them. You know, find the odd Lehman Russ maybe, but you're not looking at a tank company.
No.
You know, things like that. Like, you know, make some narrative choices to represent slaves rather than an elite Guard unit. But I thought that would be awesome. Like, you wouldn't ever really see that on the table.
And
really cool to do, like, Necrons with a side of these kind of enslaved human beings who are being forced to fight maybe even other humans out of fear of their own life. Like, that's kind of really cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sam, next one.
So I have the Aratep dynasty. This Necron dynasty is located in the south of the Segmentum Tempestus. South of the Segmentum Tempestus in 898.M41. They assaulted the maiden world of Silentia to plunder an ancient gem that was most likely a shard of the Void Dragon. Later on in 912.M41, this shard escaped from its imprisonment, laying waste to the dynasty in a mindless rage. So the shard came back and hurt them. And eventually, the Cryptex are Necron technological specialists whose purpose is to study the highly advanced and ancient technology of their race, were able to force the beast back into its cage. So that's all we know about the Aratep.
Cool. So the next one is the Arin Marok dynasty. And this is located in the Ultima Segmentum. It was an independent Necron dynasty, but its overlord Sauron swore allegiance to Imatek the Stormlord to defend the world of Summonor against...
Oh, I see you're doing Lord of the Rings. I was like, what are you doing?
to defend the tomb world of Summonor against Farseer Starbane, lest it be destroyed.
Farseer Starbane, or Mithrandir, or Gandalf.
Starbane.
Oh,
that's Jurassic Park.
I love that movie.
So this is the next dynasty, and it is the Charnavoke dynasty. These guys are on the eastern fringe of the universe, and their worlds were actually ravaged by Tyranid hive fleets. The dynasty now is fractured and only a pale mirror of its former glories. Much of the territory it once ruled lies far to the galactic southeast, beyond the eastern fringe of the Ultima Segmentum. As a result of this, many of the dormant tomb worlds were devoured by a High Fleet behemoth, while countless others have been ravished in counterattacks against the Tyranids by the Imperium. As a result of this, the remaining systems of the Charnavok dynasty are many but small and scattered. The livery of the Charnavok dynasty honours the core worlds lost to these attacks, with all of their warriors bearing the colours of Night Unending to some degree. The most prestigious, the more prestigious in the Necron rank, the more the deep blue adorns their carapace, with Faeron Tharek's entire frame clad in midnight blue. Night Lords again.
Crimson Fists.
They're all Night Lords.
The Charnavok symbol represents the original three Crone Worlds and surrounding outer planets of the dynasty, although only a small fraction of these worlds now remain. And their kind of symbol is three circles that are connected by some Necron lines.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was quite cool to see some livery and, again, appearance. You know, yeah. There's not many that have that detail, but I can imagine painting these guys up and, you know, just having for warriors like a forearm blue or the helmet blue or the head, should I say.
Shoulders.
Or shoulders.
Or the knees or the toes.
Knees and toes.
Oh, it's so funny every time.
Yeah. Or, you know, and things like wraiths being like, you know, maybe top half in midnight blue or something. Just
could
to break
be quarters.
Up silver. Yeah, quartered scheme. Yeah.
No.
No. But yeah, I thought that was really cool. Anyway.
I have the Divankar.
Divanak.
Divanak Dynasty. The DD. The Double D Necrons. They have only recently fully awakened. Originally awakening from the Great Sleep.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
The Great Sleep is a period when the Necron race went to slumber on their tomb worlds after the War in Heaven and the rebellion against the Shatan. Satan?
Catan.
Skatkan.
Catan.
Catan. Isn't that a Necron character? Not
Catan.
Isn't that
that's what I was going to call it.
The Catan. Isn't that a Tau character?
What? No.
Is that not? Okay.
No. I don't know what you're thinking of.
I don't know. Who really knows? In early M41, from their crown world of Trakon, again, crown worlds were once the hubs of galactic Necrontyre power. Necrons from crown worlds tend to have survived the Great Sleep in excellent condition, and the worlds are untouched by disaster and other races. As a result, they tend to be the hub of Necron dynasties, and the Necron overlords rule from them. So the Necrons of the Divanak dynasty were unable to shake off their hibernation-induced disorientation for nearly five centuries, and this made them slightly vulnerable to assault by nearby forge worlds of the Imperium.
Sleepy Tau. These are the teenage, I need to call them Tau, the teenage Necrons just don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah. Eventually, the dynasty were able to rebel from the human siege and drive the Imperial forces from their world. Since then, they've been attempting to search for the lost tomb worlds of their dynasty. Thus far, they've been unable to make contact with any of them, as the missing worlds were engulfed and destroyed by a warp storm thousands of years ago.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, pretty fun-looking dynasty. I always think of Duck Dynasty whenever I hear that word.
Okay.
Yes. Right, so, the Empire of the Severed. I wanted to say the Empire of the Severed Hand for some reason.
Yeah, I want to say that too.
But the Empire of the Severed is an unknown dynasty within the Greater Necron. Within the Greater Necron structure. It started on Tomb World of Sarkon, located in the northeastern border of Segmentum Obscurus. However, the planet was ravaged by radiation storms during the Great Sleep, which destroyed the memories of the Necrons sleeping within.
Oh, interesting.
So forgetful Necrons.
Well.
No, I can't say that.
Oh, dear. The Master Program took charge, not realising its own memories had been corrupted, and it identified itself as the Sarkoni Emperor. Why not?
Okay.
I mean, that's pretty much what I do every morning. Yeah. I am the Emperor.
I am the Sam Coney. So yeah, it proceeded to conquer nearby tomb worlds, or the nearby tomb world of Takarak, to bolster its forces. The Emperor has since then conquered three more tomb worlds in this manner, and has even started attacking non-Necron worlds using mind shackle scarabs to subdue the living creatures there and bring them under its control.
Ooh. So hang on.
That's quite cool.
So do Necron dynasties have infighting?
Yes.
Yes.
So they're basically just trying to conquer each other.
So since like the War in Heaven and after the Great Sleep, they've...
Even before this.
Yeah, but they were more like, we are a race. It's the same way like Imperium. There's parts of the Imperium that hate each other.
Yeah, but
they're not going to go out all out war against each other. So this understand is, there's other threats.
So this is effectively chapters becoming standalone things and then fighting
almost
each other.
Almost becoming their own empire, yeah. So it'd be like the Space Wolves being like, we control Fenris and the worlds around it. You Blood Angels appear, we'll fight you off because this is our territory.
Right, okay.
Which wouldn't happen. But for the Necrons, that is the case.
Okay.
So this is the Hyrek dynasty, or should I say was. The Hyrek dynasty was a Necron dynasty. The Eldar Craftworld Altok.
Whatever that one is, so the funny symbol, the green.
That one.
The green one.
No, that's Biltan, isn't it?
Yeah. That's...
Oh, they're the blue one then?
No. That's...
Yeah, are they blue with white heads? Like Dire Avengers, I believe. But I could be wrong. Anyway, the Eldar craft world of Aliatok.
No, they're blue with yellow helmets.
Ah. The opposite of Yandan.
So Yandan is yellow with blue helmets.
Yes.
No, hang on. Hang on. 2 seconds.
What?
Just waiting for the page to load.
Just in case.
Have you got a...
I don't want to say the wrong thing.
And then fact about Estonia.
People,
it's only going to be me that gets shouted at.
It's me. It's fine. Hang on. The images are loading. Yeah, they're blue with yellow helmets.
Okay.
Oh, cool. And white helmets.
Yeah, I thought they had white helmets.
Oh, no, that's the Dire Avengers.
Oh, okay.
The Guardians have blue with yellow helmets.
Okay.
And facts about Estonia?
Just throw one in there to just break this up.
Every year, thousands of skiers gather in Otepää. For the annual Tartu Marathon. The marathon is part of the International Worldloppet cross-country skiing series and offers two distances, 63 kilometres or 31 kilometres. There are even special activities for kids too. So, Matt, you can get involved when me and Neil next year are doing it.
Awesome. That sounds amazing. I'll probably still die on the kids' course.
Can I do snowboarding?
Do they, by any chance, use yellow and white helmets?
They do. We can. You know what? Next year, we'll go and we will wear blue spandex and yellow crash helmets, and we will be the Latok team.
Anyway, so these Eldar of Craftworld unnamed was able to predict the awakening of this dynasty to the day. So as soon as the vast stasis locks protecting the deep war crypts started to disengage, the first Necrons crawl out of the tomb and the Eldar are waiting for them. ... Dead Necrons. This dynasty awakes and they gradually kind of waking out of their slumber and an entire craft world wipes them out.
Because they're still in their stupor.
Yeah, they're still kind of waking up. And also they're not in any kind of, like, the whole tomb world is waking up at different moments.
Yeah. Do you reckon somebody was back with the Elder and went,
wipe them out, all of them?
The Farseer.
Who's in charge? Is there a named Farseer?
No, Palpatine. We don't really have... Yeah, Farseer Palpatine. Palpatine. Sheev Palpatine.
So next up is the Saltec Dynasty.
Probably the most famous one.
The Saltec Dynasty is the Necron Dynasty currently ruled over by the Pharaoh Imhotep. Pharaon Imhotep.
They're not Egyptians.
They kind of are.
From now on, I will call him Tepi, the Stormlord. Consisting of 8 tomb worlds, its crown world.
80.
Okay. Consisting of 80.
It's like the biggest one ever. 8.
Consisting of 80 tomb worlds, its crown world is the Mandgora on the Eastern Fringe. in times before the biotransference that transformed the Necron tier into the Necrons, the Sautek dynasty was ranked as the third most powerful of all the dynasties. Through chance of design, many of the core Sautek tomb worlds survived the Great Sleep. Now, the Sautek dynasty is more powerful than any other and is quickly becoming a major threat on the Imperium's eastern borders. To the Imperium, the dynasty has become synonymous with Necrons and is erroneously believed by many that they represent the alien race as a whole, with all the other dynasties being mere offshoots of Sautek. Its notability is noted as being well, that's poor editing by me. It is noted as being the most aggressive and the most eager to in attempting a new wave of expansion to restore the Necron race to its former glory. They are known to frequently enslave non-human worlds.
Mm.
I was going to put loads about Imi the Stormlord, but I thought I'd just leave him out of it.
Yeah. I think when we come back to Necrons, actually, I'd quite like to maybe take a character each and do kind of the three of the most famous characters that you can play.
Yeah.
Because I think I cover the Tomb World, the dynasty that has Trazin the Infinite, who's a really cool character, appears in a lot of the Fall of Cadia campaign books and stuff. He's got a cool role in all of that. So yeah, it'd be cool to come back to Necrons and do that.
Okay, cool. So next up is the Khansu dynasty. Not all the Necromunda. Oh no.
It's not even late yet.
I know. It's because I haven't worked today.
I was going to say, you got the day off. You
shouldn't be doing this. Right, so not all the Necrontyr people went willingly to the transformation chambers. And none more so were unwilling than the nobles of the Khansu dynasty. When political manoeuvring failed, an armed revolt was launched. They really didn't want to be turned into...
That's fair enough. Necrons. I wouldn't want to.
Come on, guys. Let's go become robots.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. The flesh is weak.
However, it was a futile effort, as they could not hope to defeat their Catan masters. Prince Raxan, however, went willingly, and he had hopes that he could redeem his people. One by one, the worlds of the Khansu system were brought to heel, and the last remaining rebels were dragged off to the biotransference chambers.
Get in there!
I could just see these Necrons, and she's like, oh, yep, and these people have been dragged kicking and screaming.
It's making me think of Cybermen in Doctor Who.
Mm.
Just being them dragged to the chambers where they're turned into Cybermen.
Yeah.
And some do just march in because what other choice have we got?
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily like, yay, I'm becoming a Cyberman, but they just almost give up because there's all these Cybermen around them, heavily armed, we can't get out, so I guess I'll just go to this willingly. And there's others like kicking and screaming and stuff.
Hmm.
So I'm a Doctor Who geek. Sorry.
It's all right. Somebody's got to be.
Yeah, I love it.
At first, Raxan was pleased that the Khansu dynasty had been saved in inverted commas.
Well, they get to live forever. That's pretty saved.
However, as the war in heaven dragged on slowly, he could see that the Catan masters for what they really were. Mm. And the Khansu dynasty was slowly wiped out as they were sent to the forefront of major battles and conflicts where there was no hope of winning, let alone survival. So it's like, right, these guys are going first because they rebelled against us.
Yeah.
We're going to wipe them out completely.
Wipe them out.
I thought you were going to carry on with that.
It's, you know what it is? It genuinely is just a reflex now. Whenever someone says
them out.
When everyone says it at work, in my head, or out loud, a number of times, it's just wipe them out.
All of them.
Get
all of them.
So, yeah, basically, they've been wiped out.
They were wiped out.
And execute with Order 66.
That's probably what happened. With the Necron rebellion against the Catan, no one fought so hard as to see them defeated. Currently, Rak'San seeks to see the remaining fragments of the Catan caged so that they never will rise again to power.
Mm. Okay, so some of the dynasty survived now under this prince, Rak'San.
No, sorry. Rak'San is the only surviving member.
So he is the whole Kansu dynasty.
He is the whole Kansu dynasty.
That's kind of cool.
So he is, yeah, he's kind of like, right,
oh.
I can't redeem myself in the eyes of the people because there are no.
Yeah. I wonder if you could play one, like, do an assassin. I never saw assassin and just create a Necron model and use ever saw assassin rules and have him in your army. That would be kind of cool. Like, you see, you haven't got to try and come up with house rules for a Necron version or whatever.
Oh, no.
I mean, you could use any of them, but I think the Eversaw, to me, kind of says, I'm an angry Necron.
I was going to go with Calidus because of the...
Phase sword.
Phase sword.
Yeah, but it's very stealthy. Yeah. I don't know. For me, Necrons are like big, hulking Terminators.
Mm.
I'll be back.
Yeah, if I had an army, they'd all be red-eyed.
Yeah. I could imagine an Eversaw assassin kind of jumping out and I'm going to rip you apart. And if you kill me, I'm going to explode.
Mm.
I imagine Necrons explode. I don't know why. Well, I just do.
When they are attacked.
Anyway, that's a really cool idea in my head. So the Cardanath dynasty. There's not really anything to note of this dynasty. They haven't really achieved much. They are in the Ultima segmentum and often ally with other dynasties to keep their realm safe. So they have one tomb world that's quite small. Not all of them awoke properly, so lots got destroyed. So a very small dynasty. So they can't really go out and start expanding their empire.
Yeah.
So they often kind of, when a larger dynasty nearby them is going on an attack, they'll join in for safeguarding of their tomb world in case the Imperium or others come knocking. So they almost kind of use themselves as servants to then pay for their protection.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I could find on the Cardaneth dynasty.
Next up is the Mainarkin.
Where's the inn?
Mainarchy.
Mainarch.
Next up is the Mainarch dynasty. Before the war in heaven, the Mainarch held a sinister reputation among the other Necrontyr dynasties, known for their savagery and malice. The Silent King deliberately conditioned them to have their ruthlessness deepened during their transformation into the mechanical Necrons, utilizing them with brutal efficiency in the revolt against the Shatan. It is said that the Mainarch warriors are the ones who obliterated the Shatan Lilandor. That's it, did it again. Landigor. Well done. The Flayer. Ligandor the Flayer. Oh, okay, that makes sense about the flayed ones now. Oh, Landigor the Flayer. But before his death, he infected them with his own dark hunger for all life. The Mainarch found no peace after the revolt, instead hunting the galaxy for any remnants of the old ones to destroy. It is said that the first instance of the curse of the Flayer was encountered in the courts of the Mainarchy. Before the Great Sleep, the other Necron dynasties such as the Altun and Saltek counseled the Silent King to destroy the Mainarch. So their infestation and shame could be erased once and for all. However, the Silent King maintained that he still had use for them, and they were allowed. During the Great Sleep, large amounts of Canotep constructs and solar manipulator arrays protected their tomb worlds from danger. So they went to sleep and basically set up awesome defense networks.
Awesome robots, yeah.
To stop other seemingly backstabby Necron overlords to go in there and kill them.
Yeah. That's cool, because you could, again, if you were doing this dynasty, use a lot of Canotep machines, use lots of those arrays in your army list, and maybe do a bit more of a castle up Necron army with long range firepower.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
So once they emerged from their slumber, they obviously had a high level of strength because they were so protected. The dynasty finally emerged from the sleep after ancient Carasol binary star went supernova. Upon awakening, many emerged from stasis to only quickly transform into flayed ones, while hundreds of thousands more emerged, unaltered beyond their unnatural lust for destruction and bloodshed. As the unaffected Necrons of the Mainarch realized they too would eventually descend into nothing but savage flay ones, they embraced the hatred for all life. However, it was the efforts of their overlords, most of all Ferek. Oh my god. Exumbakir?
Zunbakir.
Yeah, Zunbakir.
It's pronounced as a Z, not an X.
So most of all, Zunbakir, the Ferek, that allowed order to be restored to the dynasty. Zunbakir gave the dynasty a purpose for which it was well suited. The genocide and the systematic extermination of all life.
So nice. This lot is all Skynet, basically.
Yeah. Basically.
These are like the Terminators at their worst.
After years of probing and studying, the dynasty first made contact with the Imperium in the ongoing Orferian War.
Right, so the Mefric Dynasty. The Mefric Dynasty is located in the Ultima Segmentum. They are known for being planet killers and solar executioners during the War in Heaven.
That's quite cool.
Exterminatus, anyone?
Mm.
The greatness of this dynasty has faded to tatters, however, as Faeron Kyrek the Eternal was destroyed by Elder Assassins. Oh, that's such an ironic name. He's the Eternal, but he's dead.
Yeah.
Alongside the dynasty's Crown World. So not only was he destroyed, Crown World's gone.
Mm.
This left a power vacuum, as many of Mefrit's overlords still cling to the past. I'm not entirely sure what that means for them as a whole.
Mm.
But one overlord in particular, Zarathusa, the Ineffable.
They all give themselves pompous titles, don't they?
Exactly. he has turned his legions to the stars once more to go on a crusade of reclamation.
Do you know, when Estonia reclaimed independence from the Soviet Union in 1991... it was referred to as the Singing Revolution because in a series of mass demonstrations, the Estonians sang songs of national pride, national songs, and patriotic hymns that were strictly forbidden under Soviet rule.
Oh, wow. Good on them.
Mm.
Good.
Awesome.
Next.
Awesome. The Necthist Dynasty. So during the Necron Wars of Succession, the nobles of the Necthist dynasty, they earned the reputations as betrayers and traitors, a result of many broken alliances with other Necron tier dynasties. Though these events occurred long ago, the taint of dishonor still hangs over the Necrons of the Necthist dynasty, and they are fiercely distrusted and disliked by the Faerons of other dynasties. The Necthist's crown world is Mobius. Is situated in the Ultima Segmentum. This world's tombs are set to change so that not one journey into them is the same. The Death Watch have taken interest in this form of security, so much so that they have sacrificed many a kill team to unlock the mechanisms of how it works. So they just keep sending kill teams in to go find your way to the center, find how they do this, and then somehow get out so that we can do it too. Awesome. Go! And they never return.
Speaking of technology, did you know that Estonia is the first country in the world to adopt online voting back in 2005?
Impressive.
You can vote from anywhere. With a internet signal.
I was going to say, yeah.
Can't vote from anywhere. Like, underwater would probably suck.
Yeah, probably wouldn't work.
No.
And be cold.
It would be.
Mm.
So, next up is my very short recital about the Nemeret dynasty. They are a dynasty of Necron. Crowshar is the Necron overlord. That is it.
Cool.
Yep, that's it. They are a dynasty and they're led by Krauser. So I'll tell you a little bit more about Krauser. So Krauser was the Necron overlord, as I said, of the Nimrit dynasty, who came to the defense of one of his tomb worlds, which had been invaded by Tyranids. Eventually, Krauser's forces became overwhelmed, but the Necron overlord refused to retreat and yield any domain of the Necrontyr to such mindless vermin. Instead, he gave the order to open the tomb world's vault and unleash the endless flame, which scoured both the Necrons and the Tyranids from the world.
Nice. It's
basically like a weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah, style. Just a nuke in the middle of this planet and just went click, click, boom!
It's like, if I can't have it, you can't have it.
Yeah, that is a very Necron thing to do, actually. They are kind of that pompous, arrogant, kind of Egyptian pharaoh-like characters, aren't they?
Indeed.
I imagine, yeah, that being their MO, like, if I can't have it, no one have it.
Maybe it's that rapid calculation. Well, if I can't figure out, I figured out the success rate is less than 1%, therefore...
Never tell me the odds.
Damn it! Anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, cool, awesome. So the Nephric dynasty is another dynasty within the Ultima Segmentum. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, lots of there, but then the Ultima Segmentum is the biggest one.
Yes.
There are so many dynasties. We're only on an end.
This one... at least it's only one episode.
Keep your positivity.
This dynasty is ruled over by Faeron Silphek, and it is a... It is? No, it's not. a trio of stars supplies the crown world with a near-limitless supply of power, allowing the warriors to drink deep and grow strong.
Okay.
Right, okay, you didn't go with that one. No. when the Faeron awoke, he became obsessed with the stars, and his cryptex crafted him a skin of living gold. So they're gold ones, quite basically. This gift he shared
with... Get you in a gold spray. They can look like custodes.
It'd be fantastic. This gift he shared with his followers so they can embody the glory of the Triple Suns whilst bringing battle to their enemies.
That is quite cool. Yeah. Living gold as well makes me think of kind of, you know, like T2.
Yeah.
Where he's kind of like liquid and he kind of reforms.
Meti polyalloy.
Yeah. That's what I can see, but just golden. So when they're like blown apart, there's just all these puddles and they kind of slowly sink together in gold.
Yeah.
So the Nihilak dynasty is a dynasty which ventures little outside of its own domains. Whilst its isolationism is beneficial to alien races, it also carries a peril. Undepleted from the wars and military expansion, the Nihilak viciously act against any interloper in their sector. If attacked, they do not rest until the aggressor has been utterly destroyed. Recently, however, they have ended their policy of isolation and have begun a campaign of expansion from their borders. The Nihilak dynasty itself is under the command of Faeron Crispek, and contains possibly one of the most interesting Necron characters, Trazine the Infinite, which is quite cool. So I wonder if it's something he's collected, because doesn't he have possession of that Death Bell?
Dong dong.
That was that in Dark Imperium, or was that in, I think that was in the Fall of Cadia campaign book. There's a part where this bell that doesn't ring started ringing and it started destroying loads of things in his kind of museum.
Oh,
and that's where, and then he suddenly like goes, something's going on, I need to go to Cadia. And he appears at Cadia at a certain point in the back.
Yeah.
I don't want to give too much away, but he does some cool stuff. Yeah, so I quite like Trazine the Infinite. So this is one of my favourite dynasties.
Cool.
I believe they've got kind of a bluey-teal colour to them. Like, mostly silver, but, like, their shoulders.
It's those ones.
Yeah. Quite a cool kind of colour scheme.
Sorry, next up is the Novik dynasty. This dynasty are located in the Ultima Segmentum. The Novik march to war in crimson livery, echoing the bloody rituals of their past. Bloody rituals.
So these guys are red.
These guys are red blood angels. I mean, dynasty. I mean, Necrons. The distinctive colour scheme of the Novik derives from their battle rituals in the time before biotransference. Having slain their enemies in battle, Novik warriors would dab their faces and arms in the blood of the vanquished, a practice now echoed in the crimson carapaces of their soldiery.
They sound more like crimson fists.
Yes. Their territory includes the crown world of Dol 6 and the active tomb world of Draven. The Novik dynasty is currently fighting against numerous orc hordes. During the battle with Death Guard, known as the Pallid Hand, on Hollowfall, sounds like Winterfell. Forces of the Novik dynasty were infected by Mortarion's biomechanical ferric blight. The disease spread to their tomb world and have created a devastating epidemic. The Crimson King is the Necron overlord of the Novik dynasty and controls the Shistan Shard, known as the Crimson God. It is an unwilling vassal, though, that seeks out destruction in battle with its incredible powers, but never quite in the way that the Novik dynasty would wish for. He led forces against the Iron Hands and the Brazen Claws in the Crusade of Steel in 900.M41. Despite his dynasty inflicting heavy casualties of the Space Marines, he ultimately struck down in the attack led by the Cardan Stroven. Oh, he's dead.
Led by...
Well, he's been struck down. Stronus.
Is he a thing?
He's a Brazen Claw, I believe.
So he's dead?
Well, we don't know he's dead. He's struck down.
He's a Necron. He's been uploaded into another body.
Probably.
Or is currently being repaired in his current one.
So that's them. Fun little Crimson King thing.
Yeah, they're kind of doing lots of things. They've fought Death Guard. They're massively fighting orcs right now. And had a battle with some loyalist space marines.
Mm. And they've got a bio disease going on.
Mm. With a Catan shard as well.
And they've got a Catan shard.
Which not all dynasties do.
No. Awesome. Right, so I've got a really horrible one to pronounce.
Yeah.
The Ogdubek. I think that's how you pronounce it, dynasty. They are known for their technological mastery, so they are harder, better, faster, stronger. They were well prepared for the Great Sleep, and as a result, when they awoke, this Necron dynasty was more powerful than most other dynasties who have emerged from stasis.
All right. So
they might not
well
be
prepared.
They might not be very big, but they are one of the stronger ones because they were well prepared.
So they're the scouts. Always be prepared.
Yes.
Nice. So I've got the Oltep dynasty. And these are some dead Necrons. So in M40, they awoke to find their planet ruled by the demon prince Beelbgor. In the Core War, the Oltep dynasty's forces were annihilated by the demonic legions of this demon prince.
This is the Orisku dynasty. These names are getting very obscure.
Orisk
dynasty.
My next one's the obscure name.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, Oriskar. Which has... this dynasty has been infected by the Flayed virus, the result of contamination by the Eldar craft world. Slowly, the population of the tomb world shrinks further as Necrons devolve into Flayed ones.
Can't decide if that's a good thing or not, though. Like, Flayed ones, yeah, they are more primitive and they're not, like, you know, planning massive invasions or anything like that. But they are just going around randomly just trying to murder everyone.
But how do they get, in that point, how do they get off the tomb world? Are they...
No, they've got some intelligence. They're not mindless. I would say they've got some kind of intelligence. Otherwise, like...
Who knows?
I suppose they could be absolutely bestial, like the Death Company, and they're kind of lulled into a sense of calmness and then unleashed.
The Uruskar dynasty. The Necrontyr nobles of the Uruskar dynasty were great rivals with those of the Sortek. So while the Sortek power was spreading throughout the ancient stars, the Uruskar had a small holding of ancestral worlds that held great technological marvels. Once they awoke from the Great Sleep, they put their rivalries to a side and on hold so that they could further the cause of the Necron Empire needs, crusade, whatever.
Mm. Interesting.
So this is Imatek, the Sormlords guys, right?
No, that's the Celtic.
That's the Celtic.
That's what I'm saying. They were rivals of the Celtic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So then them and the Celtic fell out, and they put that all on hold to further the need of the empire. Is that what it's saying? Right.
Yeah.
Celtic.
And probably because the Celtic were the third biggest and now suddenly the biggest.
Mm.
So they probably thought, oh, we can't take them now, so let's put it on hold until we can actually get an upper hand. Possibly. Anyway, moving on. So the Rattak dynasty. The Rattak dynasty is known for its constant feud with the Kayra dynasty.
My dynasty.
Yes, indeed. Both dynasties dispatched death marks to assassinate their other's leadership. As a result, both dynasties are now left leaderless, which made me laugh so hard when I read that. So it's like, you guys, go and kill their overlord. And at the same time, the other team world is going, you guys, go kill their overlord. Oh, neither of us have got overlords. Damn. Like,
so the Kayra dynasty is known for its constant feud with the Rylek dynasty. Both dynasties dispatched death marks to assassinate the other's leadership. As a result, both dynasties are now left leaderless.
Oh, surprise, surprise!
I wonder what happens, whether they'll get taken into another dynasty and just completely taken over, or whether just one of the lords will step up and become the overlord.
I reckon the Celtic dynasty is coming in and be like, yeah, we're going to use you, and we're going to use you, and you're going to go follow him.
Yeah, probably.
Awesome. So, the Sarnec dynasty can be found on the crown world of Zapanek, which can be found in Segmentum Pacificus. We haven't spoken about that yet. I don't actually know where Segmentum Pacificus is in the grand scheme of things.
Hang on, give me a second. I'm going to guess, and then Sam's going to tell me I'm wrong. So you've got like Obscurus and the Terran, like Solar. And then I think if you go right a little bit and down, it's kind of like before Ultima.
See, but in my mind, I would think it would be to the... It's not, but I would have placed it to the left of Terran. Because
so Segmentum Solar.
Because I'm thinking of Pacificus, as in the Pacific.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Yeah, Neil is... Okay. It's to the left. So you've got Segmentum Solar.
Yep.
Literally, to the left of it, there is Segmentum Pacificus.
Okay. What planets are in there?
So we have the Veiled Regions.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm trying to think of anyone. Choros is there. The Sabbat Worlds.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know the Sabbat Worlds.
So Saint Sabbat, young girl.
That's Gaunt's Ghosts area.
Yep. You have Constantinium. Nothing really amazing. Yeah. It's all like Hive World, Agri World, Shrine World, Forge
it's
World.
It's on the edge of the universe, I guess, isn't it?
Well, it's actually quite close. I guess it's quite close to Terra.
Yeah.
Really? It's actually really close. It's closer than Baal is.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way.
Yeah.
I can show you if you guys want to see a map.
That's okay.
That's all right.
Just basically, imagine the galaxy with a rip in it. Look to the left.
Cool. Awesome. So one of the greatest battles of the War in Heaven was fought above Zapanek, and the fleets of the Sarnec dynasty managed to fight off the vast Elder Assault, whose numbers were too many to count. However, there was not enough time to clear the space around Zapanek before the Great Sleep fell. And so the planet was shielded by a spinning mass of living metal and wraithbone, which is a pretty cool image.
Mm.
The current ruler of the dynasty is Tharzar the Invincible, the self-styled Pirate King.
Awesome. Only the Necrons.
Mm-hmm.
Only the Necrons.
No, they can't all be Egyptians.
That's true. Egyptian pirates.
Arr, Pharaoh.
Okay.
That's what I imagine it's like. Arr, Pharaoh. Arr, mummy.
let's not go there. I don't want to go down that route too much. So the Sekhmetar dynasty. This is a Necron dynasty which currently serves as a client to the most powerful Sortek dynasty, under Imhotep the Stormlord. The Sekhmetar have been in the service of Imhotep for many years, conquered by the Stormlord during the Necrontyr Wars of Succession. So these guys are simply just, we work for you guys. I guess he lets them keep their identity and that kind of helps keep them in line. But he could have technically just gone, you're all Sortek Dynasty now.
Yeah.
But that's kind of cool.
Cool.
And then somehow I'm doing the next one. I think there was just a mix up. So the Shemnok Dynasty. These are some dead Necrons. So the Shemnok was a Necron tomb world that was invaded by the forces of the Iron Hands and the Brazen Claws chapters. The ensuing battle saw Shemnok's Necron dynasty defeated. So this is similar battle to the one you shared with the Crimson King.
Yeah.
Because they fought the Iron Hands and the Brazen Claws.
Oh.
So I wonder if they wiped out these guys and then moved on to another dynasty that was close by. Yeah. Anyway,
cool.
Just a thought.
Is it me? Oh, cool. Yes. The Thokt Dynasty.
Two left, guys. Two left.
Oh, yes. So this is the Thokt Dynasty. They are... their crown world is the Meghosta, or the Cradle of War. It sounds like the... is it the Cradle of Light, the Tomb Raider? The
Cradle of Life?
Life. Cradle of Life. So the Cradle of War, the exact opposite of that Tomb Raider movie. the territory of the Thokt Dynasty is located in the Segmentum Pacificus. It is located within the Hydrocry Deeps, a region of space within the Segmentum Pacificus filled with radiation-emitting void rifts. The Thokt Cryptex have learned to harness the radiation to power the dynasty's weapons and soldiering, both of which can be seen to emit an eerie blue glow as a result.
A blow glow.
It's
a glow after being blown.
Yep. In 994.M41, the dynasty's fringe worlds were invaded by the orcs of Bloodtooth. Entire worlds were turned into killing fields in order to grind down the orcs in a war of attrition. The dynasty symbol is derived from the position of the sky of Hykra Deep's star relative to the crown worlds of Mangusha.
Cool.
Nice.
Sound pretty cool?
Kind of cool. These could be really fun to paint with that blue glow.
The blue glow?
No, the blow.
The blow glow. I don't know if you can paint that.
Oh, I could.
Right. The Sonthar Dynasty is, in relative terms, a newly awoken dynasty that has spent most of its time battling the Eldercraft world, Uthwe. With early battles seeing them suffering heavy defeats, however, because of Necron self-repair and reanimation protocols, these protocols have kept the Zonthar forces strong. I just have this Terminator image of a half body of a Necron crawling along the floor, carrying on to try and kill them, whilst others are just rephasing in.
Yeah, I'm sure I've seen someone who was trying to get the most out of the Necron box and did literally do that, do like half of their unit kind of crawling forward and the other half just legs, slowly reforming. And then just mix them up with another unit that were fully built.
Yeah.
And just had like these large squads of Necrons in different areas of animation. Kind of looked quite cool. Like he pulled it off.
Okay.
Kind of a way of spreading the box cost.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. It is ruled over by Faeron Nemesor Varagon Adravic. I love it how you gave me that really difficult one to pronounce.
I didn't check them all, to be honest.
And he is usually accompanied into battle by his rule by his royal court, which includes Overlord Arzan Ardra, the regent of Oblivus, who is the most untrustworthy second in command, but is a necessary evil.
Okay.
More recently, the dynasty has found itself battling against the Imperial Knights of House Terrin.
Good. We're winning as well.
I like how you've got in brackets dramatic look at Sam.
We're winning. It's fun.
But are you?
No, we are. Oh. We always win.
Even when we lose.
Even when you lose. Awesome. So, Necrons, what do we think?
It was cool. It was cool. 31 may have been a bit of a reach, I will admit.
hopefully you're still with us, guys.
Ooh, I think it definitely it will be worth doing a Necron overlook, like a brief segment on
the race.
This is the race. This is the sum of the thing you need, like the history of them, like the War in Heaven and
they are a chapter. They are a race that go back to some of the earliest history that Warhammer 40,000 has to offer.
Because
it's pre-Eldar, it's pre-everything else.
It's pre-everything else. They are the earliest.
Yeah. So,
And there's lots of them as well.
Yeah.
So, obviously, with all those two, like the 31 of them.
Yeah. Almost hundreds before that.
Almost like Estonia has 2,222 islands.
Really?
And
wow. That's actually a really cool fact. Some of these facts have been good.
So it's a lot of twos.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. Right. Favorite? Favorites?
Oh, man, there's so many of them.
There's so many. I really enjoyed, I can't remember the name of it. I think it was in the A group. the dynasty that used human slaves. Because I could just see that on the tabletop. Or the guy that you did, actually. The one guy, the Prince Raisin.
Oh,
Kansu.
Yes.
Was it Kansu?
The Kansu dynasty.
Just the fact of playing like Assassin Rules Necron and building a really badass character to represent him on the tabletop would be super awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, one of those two.
My favorite was probably the Crimson one.
Crimson King?
Oh, what with the Catan Shard.
And it means that I would have to paint them red again. So
that's true, yes. Yeah. You like your red armies.
Do you know? Or the Blue Glow.
The Blue Glow.
Oh, yeah, there was the guys that painted like Night Lords. That could be easy. I know how to do that now.
No, I like the... I tend to favour the ones that there's lots of information about because it kind of gets the juices flowing.
Yeah, so, when you've got more to go on, you've got more narrative to base your army around as well. Yeah. So the other one that stood out to me just thinking about it is the ones that use lots of Canatep defences. Yeah. I could just imagine this real Castellan type army that were all on kind of lookout, protecting those still asleep underneath the planet.
Yeah.
And just playing them as a real defense, heavy fortified Necron force. You don't often see that.
Talking about robots, in 2014, the co-founder of Skype, Janus and Atil, created something called Starship Technologies. It developed the world's first self-driving delivery robots, which can be seen driving around Tallinn, the outer suburbs of Estonia.
Okay.
So that was quite cool.
Wow.
About robots, and maybe they have Necrons in them.
Hopefully not.
You can imagine one driving towards you, sort of like
pull out a Gauss rifle,
pulling a knife.
A knife.
You know, it starts small. They didn't start with Gauss rifles. Like, knives are definitely where they started.
Okay.
Like a little stabby arm.
Stabby, stabby.
I think I'd go for, without having to paint it, I'd go for the Nephric dynasty, which is the triple sun worshipping.
Oh, yeah,
one.
The gold guys.
The gold guys.
Yeah, they
wouldn't
really
want to paint
cool.
it, but it's just something unique that stands out. It's,
yeah.
Do you know who's good at painting? Oh, wait, no, because Tim doesn't paint.
Sprays.
He sprays gold.
He sprays his gold everywhere. My gold, actually. He sprays my gold everywhere.
He sprays gold everywhere. Awesome. Right, we're going to take another quick break and come back with our last segment, Terra Talks.
The Adeptus Terra podcast is now a proud member of the NPC, the Narrative Podcast Consortium. Our aim is to inspire your hobby through the rich lore of the 41st millennium. If you enjoy our podcast, then make sure you check out these other awesome shows where you can get coverage on campaigns, Black Library, and all kinds of general topics of the 40k background.
The NGC 40k podcast also provides in-depth campaign coverage, audio dramas, and free-flowing narrative campaign creation.
The Masters of the Forge brings the world of the 40k to life on your tabletop, with discussion on the lore, backed up by narrative-themed rules and battle reports.
Of course, this is only a fraction of the topics covered by the podcast of the NPC. Please tune in to find out more.
Welcome back. This is our last segment of the show, Terra Talks. And this episode, we're talking about looking at the positives.
Always look on the bright side of Warhammer 40k.
The positives of being part of 40k is that you don't have to always listen to people like Sam. No.
Oh, you do.
Often you do, especially if you listen to our podcast.
Oh, you do.
So we thought it would be a really cool opportunity, matched alongside an interview we've got coming up later on, as we promised at the beginning of the show, to look at the positives of being involved in Warhammer 40,000. Mm. Some of these positives might not be things that you particularly think are important or that you already get in other areas of your life. Yep. These are things that individuals, yourself or others in your gaming community can experience. Mm. You know, since the internet and how prevalent it has been in our hobby with various Facebook groups and Games Workshop coming back through on social media, there can be some really negative things getting kicked around. And I've been part of various groups that have been quite negative towards painting advice and things like that. And I think sometimes we forget about all the positives that this hobby brings.
Yeah.
And I think as a podcast, it's kind of part of our duty, as it were, to remind people that this is an awesome hobby and you can get so much out of it.
Mm.
So that's what's driven us to talk about looking at the positives in the Warhammer 40,000 hobby.
Cool.
Awesome. Just get us all on the same page. That's where we are. That's the kind of things we're discussing. So we're just going to spend some time discussing what some of those are. I'm sure there are plenty more. These are just a few that come into our minds as we chat. And then we'll go into an interview that links very much to this and is close to our hearts, something we would like to promote to you guys.
Mm, yes.
So the first one I've got is give some focus. So something that I was thinking about was a lot of the time when I'm feeling kind of a bit rubbish or a bit worn down, often if I don't really do anything, I kind of float and fester in that mood. So I need something to give me a bit of focus to draw me away from that bad meeting or that bad conversation or that argument, whatever it was. So being able to like go home, just pull out a paintbrush and paint a model for an hour.
Yeah.
Can really give me that focus away. Gives me that escape, I guess. I'm kind of covering a couple of different things.
Yeah, it leads into sort of, it gives you an escape from X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
The bad, an escape from everyday life for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It kind of bled into that, really. I think give focus, you can take that in a few different ways. Mm. Like gives you a focus for your money.
Yep.
You know, for the disposable income that you may have, gives focus to, right, I'm going to do this project and I'm going to do it in X amount of months and like you can really set it up to do that.
Yep.
But yeah, I think mainly I kind of went into escape from X, Y, and Z, escape from that situation, that bad thing, that negative experience of life that we can sometimes feel. And just to be able to, whether it's play a game and meet up with someone, whether it's painting, whether it's just building a model or reading a book, you know, it just gives you that escape, something you can dive into that isn't real world.
Yeah.
And is fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
Well, I like the if I had to highlight one thing like that was positive about the hobby that I got from it was definitely the community element.
Okay,
like
cool.
That kind of support network stuff. Yeah. Like, so if you look at it, like our hobby hangout that took place, we had, Estonia, Germany, Canada, USA, the UK.
Yep.
There's people from...
Yeah, we've had some Australians on before.
Australia.
All over the world.
Japan.
We've hit different time zones. And all people that have relative connection and commonality between everyone. Like, drilling it down, it's a fictional universe that has developed into a game that you can go and play with your buddies, right? But it's also about that commonality, bringing people together and that connecting to people. Like, look at NPC.
Mm.
Like you've got us, you've got Master Forge, you've got the NPC.
NGC 40K.
I was going to see, that's what I get wrong.
Yeah. Well, that's because they kind of, it was their brainchild. Yeah. So the NGC created the NPC.
So you've got them and you've got different people we've met from doing stuff with them, Splinter Mind.
Yeah.
We've chatted with, we've got the, it's such a wide community. And we're able to sit there and have conversations with them for 3 hours about random stuff that I would go and sit down the pub and talk to people I've known for 10 years with.
Yeah.
About. It's that for me, that's the best and the positiveness of it. Like, I'm pretty fortunate. I have people around me that I can get that support network from.
Mm-hmm.
But like, look at Gavin, not Gavin, being in Canada.
Yeah.
Like, if you had to emigrate because of work, say you had to go to Canada tomorrow for work, you could viably have something in common with someone near you.
Yeah.
Or you can find commonality online, like Facebook and the Hangouts and Instagram. Like, yeah, I follow maybe 70 accounts that all relate to Forge World and Games Workshop and Warhammer.
Mm-hmm.
And regard it, I can go through my Instagram feed and just comment and be like, that looks really cool. And genuinely, a genuine conversation will start up about models and about painting and about hobby and stuff. And yeah, and that for me is really cool. And that's why I think it's so positive being part of this hobby. Is that's the most positive part for me, is the fact that you can go and make friends. Just by commenting on a post, as long as you're not a div.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a big part of it. I mean, the groups that I follow seem to be predominantly more of the terrain-based stuff because it gives you...
Just you terrain.
Because Neil terrain. Doesn't paint. Neil terrains. Terrains.
But they're always so positive. I mean, there's obviously... You've got your admin side of things to control that. But on the whole... I don't ever recall really seeing anything negative at all. It's always somebody's posted, this is the first bit of terrain that I've made, or this is the first model I've painted, because it happens. What do you guys think? And there's never any bad comments. The majority of the people in the groups are really nice people.
Indeed.
And you could quite happily sort of have a chat with them, say down the pub, say after going to salute or something like that.
Yeah, indeed. Which we've done
a few times. And yeah, it's just they've got you can share ideas. You can discuss techniques to learn and how you learn a new skill for painting something or building a bit of terrain or how you've kitbashed something. Mm. You know.
And yeah, well, it's like we're talking about Sam's Thanatar.
Yeah.
Mechanicum names. But yeah, you know, being able to go, cool, yeah, bring it down here. If you're worried about posing, we can look at it. You know, not necessarily, oh, I'll do it for you, or you're an idiot for not being able to do it. But simply like, yeah, let's do that. That'll be fun. Mm. And it does draw people together, like any kind of hobby or interest does. But one of the things I really like is this hobby can attract individuals who are quite hard to get on with socially,
mm-hmm.
shall we say. There are the stereotypicals, there are those for whatever reason find social interaction difficult.
Yep.
And actually I find that the 40K community as a whole is very good at engaging and accepting those individuals.
Yeah.
You know, maybe teaching them better ways of being socially engaging, mm-hmm. but also just accepting them for who they are because of this common interest.
Yeah.
You know. And I really love that about the community, as in our little group, but also just, I think, the wider community are doing that. I love the fact that it is all about connecting and showing off your stuff and commenting and encouraging other people, mm-hmm. whether they're in Australia or right in front of your face.
Yeah.
You know, because I think at the same, this hobby is very individual, mm-hmm. yet a community hobby.
Yeah.
You can't fully experience the hobby, in my opinion, on your own.
No.
Because, well, yeah, cool, you see the model, no one else, so you're never going to know if that's a great paint job, if that's a good paint job, what things you could do differently, you know, get those compliments from someone over the other end of the table. It's about creating new friends, going to events. Yeah, I'm really excited about going to the Heresy event in September because I'm going to meet a bunch of people I've never met before, play a bunch of people I've never played before. And I'm hoping, and I feel pretty confident, that it'll be a really positive weekend.
Yeah.
Of meeting some guys that love the same stuff I do. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite excited about that.
Awesome.
Did you know that Estonia has different dialects in different regions?
Oh.
So, for example, the Setos in southern Estonia have their own dialect and their own kingdom with about 12,000 speakers.
Kingdom?
Kingdom.
Kingdom.
Võru also has its own dialect with 75,000 speakers. Both dialects are on the UNESCO list of threatened dialects.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dying
because they're going to get wiped out.
All of them.
All of the dialects.
Oh, that's featured far too much in this episode.
It has, definitely. But it'll be cut out. I'll cut some of it out. Nah, cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many positives, and that's kind of part of the problem when you start trying to come up with them. Because you kind of go, well, I could talk about that, or I could talk about that, or I could talk about that.
For it's me, it's relaxing as well.
Yeah, it's a really relaxing hobby.
Well,
a lot of the
so let's bracket that with when you try and build a Thanatar and it doesn't get all held together because your friend tells you that blue tack will hold
you
it all together.
Not paying attention to what I was saying.
That's stressful and not good, but like it's quite nice. Like I always, when I start painting, I really love it. I really like painting, and it's just that starting element. It's
I find it hard to get going.
And like the whole, oh, it's going to be so much effort.
Mm.
I have to put it all away. You have to tidy up.
Yeah.
Wait, it's super difficult.
You tidy up afterwards?
Yeah, like everything goes away. I live in a clean house now.
Yeah. I don't, but everything still goes away.
You have to.
Yeah, my child will drink something. I don't know. Something bad will happen if I don't. I think for me, the biggest positive that can be a negative, but I think is mostly a positive, is that this hobby involves other people.
Mm.
That actually, for me, if I didn't engage with other people, if I weren't accepted by other people, offered support, given tips, complimented on some of my armies and models that I've spent a lot of time on, and shaken hands after a game and gone, that was really fun, thanks for your time. If I didn't get that, I don't think I'd be doing this hobby.
No.
You know, like one of the reasons we started the podcast was, hey, let's hang out. Like me and Sam were like, let's talk about this hobby we love. Hopefully encourage other people by just our enthusiasm and excitement for it, but also to hang out together and talk about this hobby that we love. You know, and then we got to add you into that and just make that even better. You know, I think all of the positives that I can think of involve other people.
Yes.
You know, because I suppose other than maybe the escape, sometimes you need that alone space and just shut yourself in a room and paint.
But that can get that from reading as well.
Yeah, but you're going to talk about what you've read. You're going to talk about, oh yeah, I was really angry the other day. Went into the painting room or wherever you do your painting, and actually I painted a really good model. Do you want to see it? You know, there's always a person at some point in the line.
Yeah.
Whether it's just before you paint because they teach you something, or afterwards to give you that compliment or offer some critical feedback and support you in your progression. People are awesome a lot of the time, and I think we forget that and we bash people over the head, or we see the minority who are saying stupid things on the internet or even in front of us.
It's like the event, the incident that happened at LVO.
Was it at LVO?
It was at the Las Vegas Open.
Okay.
Las Vegas Open, where the guy turned something negative into a positive, which got another positive outcome.
Trying to remember what you're talking about.
So the dude that was a bit of a div and wouldn't let someone go back and do something. That guy.
Two stories.
The positive that came from that
is he carried on playing because he's like, I'm here. I want to give them a show. Okay, I'm going to lose, but I'll still play, which we always tell people, carry on playing, because you know it's, you never know.
Yeah.
And one of the people watching the stream was something to do with a computer games company called Riot Games.
Okay.
And they, I can't remember the sum of money that was offered to him, but
as a sportsmanship award,
because they don't have one. They offered him his money, and he gave it away to a charity.
Children's Hospital.
Awesome.
So, yeah, you know, something positive.
An awesome dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's another positive that's come out of something.
That's so cool. So, yeah. That's so cool.
Awesome.
And that came out of 40K. That came out of a fictional universe.
Yeah.
That's built out of Nottingham by a bunch of nerds.
Yeah. And loved by nerds, and all the nerds share all the love, and it's all good.
Awesome.
Peace.
Excellent.
And love and prosperity to you all.
Right. Now we've got Sam's interview with Malcolm from Models for Heroes.
And the next voice you hear is going to be my voice.
Not really. Haha.
No, it's definitely going to be mine.
No.
I'm first.
Damn it.
Hi, I'm Liam. If you like the Adeptus Terra podcast as much as I do, go and check out their Facebook page and give it a like. The address is www.facebook.com/TheAdeptusTerraPodcast, or go onto their iTunes and give them a 5-star review. Bye.
So welcome back. I have Malcolm here from Models for Heroes, a fantastic charity that I found online from Instagram. And I wanted to interview him today to kind of link into what we were just talking about of the benefits of the hobby. So welcome, Malcolm.
Hi, thanks, Sam.
I sent over some questions to you, but like I said, this is kind of just a chat type idea, and to really just to find out more about you and the charity and really what you guys do. So do you want to start by introducing yourself and talk about how you sort of started what you're doing and if you've got any hobby related experience, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Malcolm Childs, currently living in Newbury in the middle of the UK. Talk about being in the middle of nowhere, we're in the middle of everywhere. So it's a great place to be in central UK. So I started modelling when I was very young. My dad is a railway modeller. So being a railway modeller has never actually finished a layout in his life, but has always got railway magazines. We'd always go to model shows. He'd always have friends over that were interested in modelling. So there was always tools and plastic around the house, and you know, and he was always quite encouraging about me making kits and things. So I've been making kits, model kits, for all my life, really, on and off. You know, I think you get to about 12 and you discover girls, and you get to 16, you discover beer, and those things get more important. And then I think about 4 or 5 years ago, I got back into it again. I saw a video on YouTube about someone weathering up a Millennium Falcon.
Wow.
And it just looked amazing. I thought, I want to do that, but I don't have an airbrush. Okay, so I need to learn how to use an airbrush. I'd like to do that, but I don't know how to put the weathering effects on the thing. So, right, I have to invest in some weathering products and learn how to do that. So it took me about a year or so to get up to speed, and then I finally purchased a very expensive Millennium Falcon kit, and I've got my own Millennium Falcon now on the wall, and I haven't stopped since. I'm still building models and things.
Did the Millennium Falcon come out how you thought it would?
Yes, yes, it did. It hasn't survived the model show circuit.
Okay.
It has kind of lost its legs a little bit, but it's now retired. It now sits in my display case and doesn't move because I don't want to break it anymore. But no, it came out very well. I got a lot of positive comments from it, so
good.
I was very happy. Yeah.
I was on the 1 hour a night hobby Facebook group. Are you aware of that at all?
1 hour a night? No.
So
there are lots of Facebook modeling groups I'm on, but not that one.
No. So they are primarily it's just any painting, and the idea is just to get painting. To just do 1 hour a night, just to kind of, because people always complain about there's not enough time. Matt and I are typical complainers about how there's not enough time. And there's a guy that has built a Millennium Falcon and painted it, and it, and the whole top comes off, and they've got characters in there. All the inside is painted. Wow. There's colors on all the panels, like as in lights, LED lights in all the panels. And he's 3D printed, because he didn't like the kit, the back thruster panel, which lights up blue.
Okay.
That kind of level.
Yeah, what scale is that?
What scale is it? That's a very good question. It's big. I don't call out a scale and I'll probably just agree and say it's that.
I don't know. 172?
Yeah, why not? 172. It's about the size of, I can imagine, maybe a size 11 shoe. Bigger than that. Two size 11 shoes. Yeah.
If you pick out and play with it, that's big enough.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much it. I doubt he would. I don't think he'd let me near it. Yeah, it looks a bit precious. Problem. Sorry, I interrupted. Carry on. Carry on talking about yourself.
Yeah, so where were we? So I did that, and then I joined my local modeling club, and I started going to a lot of model shows after I'd made my Falcon and started making airplanes and tanks and things like that, you know, getting back into the hobby. And I think I've been to about 3 or 4 model shows, and I realized there were so many ex-services, armed forces chaps, and I'd never met so many at once, you know, in a group before. And I thought, well, why is that? Why is there so many these guys here in the model community? And it wasn't until I was talking to a couple of people, and they said it helps them with their post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
And anxiety. And I was like, oh, that's really good. And I didn't think anything more of it at all. You know, it was nice to be around veterans and that, you know. My dad's been in the RAF for a while since I've known him. And my father-in-law's in the army, so I'm quite used to being around military types. It's quite happy to be in that sort of group. I was on Reddit January last year, and I saw an ad for an American charity called Models for Troops, and they were sending model kits out to the chaps that were deployed, American troops that were deployed, for something to do between operations, because it's literally nothing to do. Mm. They're also finding it was helpful for guys who were suffering from mental injury. And it gives them something to do and focus their mind, and it was distracting from the world that they were in, the environment they were in. And so this charity had been set up by a chap called John Emery, and I contacted him. I said, this is such a fantastic idea. Do you know what the UK equivalent of the charity is? And he said he didn't know. So I contacted Help for Heroes. I contacted Royal British Legion and the COPCO and lots of different reference places, and I asked them, sent them emails and said, so what's the modelling charity in the UK? And there wasn't one. So foolishly, I said, right, well, I'll set my own up then.
It's always a good start.
Yeah. No one stopped me, basically.
No. No one else is doing it. Why shouldn't I do it then?
Yes, that's right. So I thought, well, there isn't one. How hard could it be? You know, just get a few models from people and send them to people who really need them, you know?
Yeah.
And use them as medicine, you know? I was invited by Help for Heroes to their HQ in Tedworth House to come down and have a look at their modeling group and what they do, and to run a session. And I hadn't thought about that at all. I thought, I was just going to give you a few models that I collected. And I went down there and ended up running a session, and I opened their cupboard and it was full of kits. And I was like, that's great. I pulled a few out and they're all started.
Oh, you know,
there
course,
will be
yeah.
tracks will put together, and all the wings will be put together or something.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, for someone who wants to try the hobby out, having a kit that's already been started and someone hasn't been able to even get past that, how are you gonna start with this hobby? You know, how are you gonna get past if it's not your kit? If you
it's,
know what
it's
I mean?
Like a first knock already. Like the person before me couldn't do this. How am I gonna be able to do it?
Yeah, that's right. Kind of like sloppy seconds for kids.
Yes, yeah.
So I thought, well, that's not good enough. So I said, well, what I'll do is I'll get rid of all the used ones and we'll get some donated ones and we'll replace them. And then I looked to their tools, and I kid you not, it was like an ice cream tub with some enamel paints and acrylic thinners and a clamp and a half a brush. And, you know, these are the tools they were expected to make models out of, you know. I thought, they haven't got the proper glues, they haven't got the sanders. How are they possibly going to remove the plastic bits? You know, they haven't got any PVA. How are they going to put a canopy on without, you know? I thought, well, right, I'll get you some tools and we'll do some proper sessions. We'll get some proper models built, and then we'll get the guys, maybe have a model club or something set up here. So it's taken a year. We've now got a modeling session running in every Help for Heroes recovery centre in the UK.
Wow.
I'd say there's a good model club of 9 people, I would say, now over in Colchester at Shabbat House.
Good.
We're now in the combat stress treatment centres as well, and they actively encourage people to come in and do lots of different art. And as well as lots of different art things, the other thing they can do is modelling. And they've got the good tools and the good kits to do that now, which is really great. I had a text from someone today to tell me that Models for Heroes have saved their life, which was quite nice.
It must be nice to have that kind of impact on people.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, I didn't realize how... I knew it was a good, fun hobby, you know, but I didn't realize how much it can actually distract you and make you just feel better just for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And how it can take you away from your stresses and take you away from the world, and you're just in this tiny little bubble of just you and the model, and you're putting it together and you're following the instructions, and nothing else matters but you and this little thing. So, it's been incredible, really.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other side is the wargaming side as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So lots of people have been asking, do we do war games? You know, because you can build the model, then you want to play with it.
Of course. Yeah. It just takes you back to the action figures of when you went to buy like a Ken or that thing. No, not the Ken. An Action Man. That's it.
Not a Barbie.
Well, I might have had a Barbie. No, probably not. No, I probably did. But having that model and all that toy and being able to play with it, like I get some people are collectors and some people have fantastic collections and they sit in cabinets very well. But I like playing with my toys when I build them.
Yeah, there's an interesting switch between scale modelers and then war gamers. War gamers don't want to build a model, they want someone else to build it for them, and then they want to play with it.
Yeah.
The scale modelers want to build them and do not touch it after that. You don't touch the model, that's not for playing with. But it's all the same. You enter the same sort of mindset, you know, when you're playing a game, you're just playing with your mates and you're just sitting there, you know, or standing there and you're looking at the table, nothing else matters. It's the same with modeling, you know. It's all the same sort of brain activity, if you like, and it's been really helpful for a lot of guys.
Fantastic. So I'm actually my father and my grandfather and my great grandfather are all in the services. So they were mainly in the Navy, and I remember my dad saying that when he was stationed on submarines and he was down underwater for like 6 months. And he said that just being underwater and the ability not to get out and see fresh air get fresh air and see the sky was really mentally challenging. And I can imagine, I can't imagine, it must be awful to be able to think when you're stationed somewhere and someone's trying to kill you or shoot at you, or it must be really hard. Yeah. And having something like this must be a massive impact to you.
Well, I mean, I guess you are trained for that event to a degree, but of course no one actually trains you to come home after that and switch off, you know. You're just expected to go home and that's it, you know. Just switch back to normal life,
yeah,
you know. And without that training between being no one really tells you how to switch back to normal sort of life, and that's quite difficult, you know.
Yeah, yeah. When actually, I love the current. I think it's the Army campaign, recruitment campaign. Is the whole belonging, and they're putting a lot of push on mental health and the whole. You're not on your own. Actually, you have all of your team there. But I can imagine it's great when you live with those people, and they're next to you. And as soon as you go home and go back to your parents, actually, there, or go back to your own flat, actually, you don't have that anymore. And I can imagine going to a Help for Heroes modeling center or going to a local gaming club would be a fantastic, almost super community for you.
Absolutely. There's definitely a social side to it, you know, that is beneficial. You know, I know a chap who can't go shopping because it's too busy and he's too worried about external factors. But he can go to a very busy and smelly model show quite happily because, you know, he recognizes the people, he knows what they're about, they're the same sort of soul brothers, if you know what I mean. So, it's a very strong feeling, you know, to be with your brothers in arms, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. It must be really nice to be able to have that. Because let's face it, as soon as you, like, I've been to Salute and to other modeling things and up to Warhammer World, and instantly you may not know the person. Like, I'm awful with names, obviously, and as soon as you see that person and you might point at that model and go, I like that model, that's painted really well, instantly they'll go, yeah, I really like that model too, and you have that unsung connection and ability to just belong. And
yeah,
and regardless if they're from the north or from Ireland, from overseas, and that one thing that's holding you together, that one connection, that that one commonality between you and that person, is it's like, oh, I went to school with this person, because you have that in common.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can go, you know what, I built that model and it was really hard, and that wing never stuck on right, and it's that, yeah, I had that too, or I once had this model that the gun kept falling off. And
absolutely,
and instantly you're best mates with them. It's like schoolyard friendships.
Oh,
you've got an action man, I've got an action man, great, let's be friends.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a commonality, you know, it's a shared goal, it's a shared activity. You'll find it in some of our model sessions, is some of the, you know, guys will sit there, don't really know each other, and then they'll start modeling, but of course everyone's now struggling with tiny pieces, struggling with pieces that don't fit right, struggling with the instructions. Mm-hmm. And there's a group dynamic emerges, you know, and everyone, and what's great is everyone's sort of looking and down and focused on their model, and you can still chat and you can still have that banter, but you haven't got the eye contact that some people struggle with, especially if you're suffering from a lot of anxiety. It's really nice, you know, because at the end of it as well, don't forget you've then got a finished model, hopefully, that you can then sort of take home and say, look what I managed to achieve, you know. Even though I struggle with instructions, even though I struggle with being in social situations, I was able to make this Spitfire or this tank or whatever it is. So it's a nice little trophy for them to take home, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, if they don't finish it in the session, they can take it home and complete it and send me a picture for the website. And we can, you know, I also, once people have been on the sessions, I sort of try and encourage them to go along to their model club or their gaming club, find one that's, you know, local to them or show.
Yeah.
And see what other people are doing the same things. You know, they'll find people in the same sort of boat if they're into their own modeling. There'll be things to chat about, and, you know, everyone will have the same sort of gripes, and you can complain about this manufacturer and that manufacturer, like we all do, you know. And there's a real social thing is very important too. Yeah. You know, like we're saying.
Yeah, and I and talking about that commonality and the I volunteer with the Air Training Corps, and we run a modeling club there. And it's we've got the Airfix, I think they're called like the Intro 2, like the super simple Spitfire planes, basically. And really, really straightforward. Like, there must be like 20 pieces. But it gives people that taster session.
Oh, the starter set.
Yeah, the starter set. So we use those, and people can come along and try it. Mm-hmm. And you get, like, we've got obviously loads of different age ranges from 13 to 21, I think, and regardless of age, regardless of rank inside the air cadets, or regardless of experience, generally they'll all sit together in one long table or one horseshoe shape, and they'll just, you can, like you said, it's that instant commonality and banter and getting along, which you don't see normally. It is a fantastic thing to see. If you had to talk about Models for Heroes. So if you had to sum up in like an elevator pitch, what is it that Models for Heroes actually does as a charity?
What do we do in a pitch? Well, I guess our official pitch is, I can read you that. We are a non-profit company, and we supply model kits, materials, and model making sundries to the mental health organisations and charities around the UK. While raising awareness of the mental health benefits of scale modelling, that's what we do. We're not mentally health first, mental health first aid trained guys. We just teach modelling, and we show people how modelling can help you relax and help your brain and help you get by. You know.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a really good thing. It's working, and it's being accepted in a lot of places. Usually when I say, hey guys, we're going to do some modeling, you get kind of a lot of blank faces, like, what?
Yes. And you say that to kids and they're like, what, like photos? And he's like, no, not modeling, like modeling.
yeah, modeling, not modeling. So I'd usually say, we're going to do some plastic scale modeling of Spitfires, and people usually get it. And then they usually say, oh, you mean like Airfix? I was like, well, yeah, technically, yes. It's like Airfix, and then people understand, you know.
You run sessions then? You go to different centres and...
Yeah, so I started just running sessions on my own, and then I realized that I couldn't get to all the sessions on my own. So I asked just online if there's anyone else who wants to help and come along to a session and run one for me. And I was inundated with people saying they'd love to. So I think I have 34 active volunteers now across the UK.
Wow.
Who take 3 or 4 hours out of their week once a month and go along to a modeling session that's nearby in one of those recovery centers or charities and help guys model, basically. We send the kits from here and the tools, and all they have to do is turn up and show them how to stick pieces of plastic together. It's and just to encourage the hobby as well, and to enthuse about it, and to talk about, because you just give a random group of people some kits and some tools and say, here you go, get on with it, without instruction or someone to be there to jimmy you along and show you how to get past the difficult parts and give you a couple of tips about how to sand something straight or how to get through the instructions that don't quite make sense. Without that, I think the whole group would kind of fail. So you need someone there, and I'm lucky to have people who are able to kind of take models to heroes and do it in the different recovery centres and charities. So it's been very good for the first year, you know, to have that many people helping me out.
If we had some listeners that maybe needed to access that as a service, how could they do that?
Do you mean who wanted to volunteer or who wanted to
ex personnel who were struggling and would need to maybe would benefit from attending one of your sessions to build that community element?
We have two sessions that are run that are not in organizations and charities currently. One is in Belfast, right, and one is in Farnborough. And so those are free to anyone who's a veteran or anyone in the uniformed services who would benefit or feels like they would benefit or want to try modeling to come along try out. If anyone wants interested in that, they're quite happy to email me, and we'll talk about my email address later, I guess. If you wanted to volunteer, same as again, you know, if you wanted to volunteer and help out somewhere else in the UK, and just let me know, and I can let you know if there's a modeling session nearby. In terms of getting models sent to you, what we do is we only supply organizations and charities directly. We do supply key workers. If we receive a referral from someone who says, you know, my client would benefit from models or some modeling activities, would you please send him some or her some? Then we say, yeah, sure, and we'll send them a few models and see how they get on, you know. And we do that because, obviously, if we were just giving them out to individuals, we'd run out of models pretty quickly.
We'd love to be able to
help everyone all at once, but we just literally can't. So we have to do it through organisations and clubs and charities and things like that.
And the other way people may want to get involved and help out is obviously to send you kits. How would I do that? And is there certain kits you're looking for?
Unstarted kits, model kits, the simpler the better. Although, you know, I've had people try and build, you know, 1/400 scale Titanics and things. So if you've got a complicated kit, that's fine. Old kits are fine. Some people quite appreciate the fact that someone had purchased a kit many years ago, looked after it, and now have donated it for a reason to help somebody. Now to help someone else, you know. So old kits are fine. But yeah, unstarted is the most important thing. And what you do is just go through your stash, find ones that you're not going to build, pop them in a box, and then send them to us. Or just get in contact with me, and I'll see if there's a session close by that you could send them to. That's usually a good way, because sometimes people quite like to be able to take their kits directly, you know, if there's a recovery centre near you.
Yeah, okay. And you also, I've seen on your Instagram, you also accept, is it Airfix Passport Miles? Is that what it's called?
Yes, they're called Flying Hours.
Flying Hours, that's it.
So on the side of an Airfix box, you get tokens, depending on the size of the box, the larger the number of tokens. And then you can then redeem those, if you're a member of the Airfix Club,
right.
To then receive kits back. And what Airfix have done is given us a free account and waived the PAP very kindly.
Wow.
So any MRs that we get, we send them off, and then effectively it's their little donation to us. So if you have any MRs that you're not going to use, then please chuck them in an envelope and send them to us.
Okay, fantastic. So pretty much if anyone needs any information then they can head straight to your website. I just went on to remind me, because as we all know, my brain is awful. I know it as modelsforheroes.co.uk. And that is correct, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Or .com. But yeah, Models for Heroes is the name of the charity. It's modelsforheroes.co.uk. And then you can email me on malcolm@modelsforheroes.co.uk also. We're also on Facebook. So if you search for Models for Heroes on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, not MySpace.
Not MySpace anymore.
No.
No. I'm pretty sure MySpace is still going, but I'm not too sure who uses it anymore. Because originally, obviously, on MySpace, sorry, a little divulge, MySpace was set up for music sharing and to promote bands. And they've kind of gone back to that more. So they've kind of tailored it much more towards that and less towards listing your top 10 friends in order and stuff.
Being friends with Tom or whoever it was.
Yeah, Tom. Yeah. He's actually on Instagram as well. And he's got an insane amount. It's that MySpace Tom. So while you're on that, while you're on there trying to find him, find Models for Heroes and follow them as well.
So on Instagram, it's models_for_heroes. That's how we've done it on there.
Fantastic. Great. Great. So that's fantastic. I was really keen to get you on and to talk about
Thank
this
you.
and to almost push out to our listeners and go, anything you can do to help out this great charity and this fantastic charity, actually quite means a lot to me. That would be fantastic. Go over to just going to their Instagram page and following them, or their Facebook and sharing all their stuff and just to promote them as much as possible. That would be fantastic. And obviously if you can send them your kits.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So your kids,
all your money.
All your money. Your money's good too. Your money's good here.
You can donate through the website. There's a PayPal link. You can click on that and just if you wanted to perhaps receive a gift or a badge, a mug or a poster, you can donate a few quid and then I'll send you one. That's how we're doing at the moment.
Okay.
Also on Instagram there's a giveaway for a model that's being painted. The name escapes me completely, but if you went on to if you follow us on Instagram, you'll see it there. And on the 6th of April, the other thing I have to say, the 6th of April, we're doing a live auction with in International Scale Modeler on YouTube, and they're doing a live auction for some very nice kits that you could get at a very good price, and all the money is going to us. So check that out as well.
That's fantastic. I'm just trying to frantically search this for this model on Instagram. Hang on. Nah, cool. We'll find it. Anyway, go to Instagram. Go to Instagram. You can find it yourself.
Yeah.
And like their page, more importantly. Great. So
yes.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this up and I can end the show?
No, I think we've talked about the email and the Facebook and how people can help and what we're about and what we do.
And the benefits of what you do and the hobby, which is great. Great.
Yeah,
so
that's right. Yeah.
That's fantastic. So like I said, go look at these guys, send everything you can to them, help them out as much as possible. And basically, if you know anyone that could benefit from help, then please refer them over. And what I'll do is I'll end it there. You'll hear the advert from these guys now after this segment. And yeah, then we'll be back afterwards with what we're going to promise to build and paint next month.
It's a sobering statistic that more returning armed forces personnel have committed suicide than were killed during the Afghanistan conflict. Currently, the UK Armed Forces is reporting a 78% rise in mental health problems. Models for Heroes is a non-profit charitable organisation that supports the treatment of mental health across the UK by promoting model building, painting and gaming hobbies. Making and creating small models requires intense focus that can complement the treatment of PTSD, anxiety and depression, not to mention the mental health benefits of the social aspect of the group. Many of us in the hobby have paint, kits and far too many miniatures piled up that we bought on a whim. So why not consider donating yours? Models for Heroes have sent over 500 donated kits to support centres right across the UK and overseas. And your support will ensure that we can provide kits and materials to many more vital treatment sessions. Visit modelsforheroes.co.uk for more details and follow us on social media.
Welcome back. Before we leave you guys for this month, we are going to do our normal hobby commitments and our goodbyes. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview and this episode in its wholeness. Before we go, what are we going to do for the next month, gentlemen?
Neil is writing his frantically, so he can start.
Well, that means he's not finished, you know.
That's
Shall I start while you type frantically and think about what you're actually going to do? So I am going to airbrush all of my Night Lords of my last 1,000 points and have them all washed in the Dragonoff Nightshade so they are ready for paintbrush.
Ooh.
So that's going to be really cool. And I plan to get a full 2x2 of my Zone Mortalis built. So that's all the walls, like just the basic walls, don't get me wrong. So that'll be a quarter of the board. Hopefully I'll get more done, but again, I want to aim for stuff that I know I can accomplish. We're recording a week early next month. Don't know if you noticed this.
We've
only got 3 weeks.
Ooh.
So I'm going to airbrush all of my Night Lords, wash them, and I'm going to get a quarter of my Zone Mortalis basic walls built.
Cool.
Go ahead, Neil.
Awesome. I am going to build the rest of the Salamanders, the Marines, and I am going to get the Vulcan built in sub-assemblies.
Ooh, Primark.
Primark time.
Yeah, it has got to happen.
It's got to happen.
Awesome.
When are you going to do your Primark, Matt?
Well, he'll be airbrushed and washed like everyone else is.
Mm.
So after this stage, I will then be picking a unit at a time to paint. Mm. But this can all happen at one point. So
in the washing process, it'll be scrub-a-dub-dub-dub-dub.
What am I going to do then?
I don't know.
I'm going to build the Thanatar.
Nice.
And then I'm going to paint a non-disclosed number of Tyranids.
How many Tyranids you got left to paint? Now, right. I suppose you've got 30 genes to do.
96.
No, you've painted some.
Nah, there'll be like... I'm going to pick 43.
You've got what? The Lictor, 30 Gene Stealers.
Mm-hmm.
And then what else?
Maybe a few Hormigants.
Termigants.
There's a number.
Okay.
Cool. There's some.
There is a number. You're going to paint some Tyranid goodness.
Yes.
That's very good, because you're going to be having to play some Tyranids next month.
Oh, what? Why am I playing Tyranids?
Because you're the only one with an actual Tyranid army.
And what's Neil going to play?
He's going to play Blood Angels.
Whose Blood Angels are you going to play?
Yours.
Well, hang on. How am I going to play myself?
You're not.
Can I write the list for Neil?
No.
No, because he's writing the list.
I'm pretty much coming up with some of the list. Because after the story.
Oh, I know. Which one was it again?
Or he could play the Tyranids, but as you've got a Tyranid...
Neil can't handle Tyranids. Yeah.
And he has technically in the past played Blood Angels.
Yes, apparently. Yes. Okay, so do you want to just remind us what that story was again?
The Heart of Rage by James Swallow.
Probably read it before.
Yeah, it's an audiobook. It's sort of, I mentioned all the books that it was in earlier on.
Yeah.
Rewind back and find it, frankly, because I haven't got it right in front of me. But yeah, that'll be next month's book club. We start a mini-series next month.
Oh, good.
3 episodes.
Yes.
Yes, we yes. do.
I went through it with Neil earlier before Sam got here. So we it's going to be fun.
It'll
so
be fun.
Sam's going to get excited.
It's going to be great.
So, Sam, just for your reaction, because everyone else is hearing this at the same time as you.
It's the Titans of the Grimdark. Yes!
So 3 episodes. We're going to cover Imperials, Xenos of, I think, 4 different races that have Titans or variants of Titans, and Chaos. So that's going to be our next 3 months worth of spotlights. So that'll be fun. That's been requested by quite a few of you guys, and I know Sam is going to be very excited by this.
Did you call me Simon?
I was indeed. Until next time, I've been Matt.
I've been Simon.
And I've been Neil.
And this has been the Adeptus Terra podcast.
Apparently.
Or some bad version of it.
Wubba lubba dub dub.
I love this show. So we're on 42. There we go.
Can you please just pause that? I want to
listen to that.
Down, 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 down,
hang on, drums.
Right, never mind.
Are you trying to give us a really weird movie quote?
No. There is a guy on.
Because occasionally we get messages of, how did you and Sam not get Neil's movie quote? And I'm like, what? Just completely blown away. See, anyway.
They're always wasted. Although one of you guys gets them.
Most of the time, one of us gets it.
Aha.
That sentence got away from you for a little while.
It did, yes. Field of Glory, which is where
Land
you split
of
your
open glory.
I don't know what you're saying.
Anyway, so yeah, you have to split your force up into 3 parts, and you can deploy your first third on the as a deployment, and then
damn, Necrons are becoming cooler.
Do it.
Issues.
Do it. Do it. So I keep thinking it's Maynard, like, you know, the cookies? Like Maynard Marillac cookies?
Give me your boots.
Give me your
motorcycle.
Boots.
Your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle.
Next.
I want to do that properly.
Give me your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle.
Do it. Do it now.
It's not a tumor.
Come on. Get to the chopper. Get us another quote about Estonia. This is why you don't shout, Neil. Just talk like a normal human being.
You have to shout when you're doing Arnie impressions.
Next. Come on.
I thought you were going to do an Estonian fact.
No.
Okay, fine.
Can't breed greatness.
Awesome. Do you reckon they had somebody at the front of the Necron warriors going, do you want to live forever?
And clearly, these obscure references are kind of getting pointless.
Someone out there. Someone. I hope.
Oh, they probably get a restraining bolt put on them.
Yes, possibly.
Fitting with a restraining bolt.
Neil. Right.
I'm just going to cut all these out. You know that, right?
Put interview here.
Welcome back. This is our last segment of the show, Terror Talks. And this episode, we're talking about looking at the positives.
Always look on the bright side of Warhammer 40K.
You won me over with that.
Tower only going to be around for a little bit. When you really hate them, you get to just bait them. Throwing them back into the sea they go.
Oh, dear.
What just happened?
Hello, and welcome back. So with me now, I have Malcolm from Hobby for Heroes. That's right.
That's Models for Heroes.
Damn it, we just did this. So,
so, hopefully I'm still alive next month. But until next time, I can't remember how to sign out the show.
Every time!